This brick is alive. Not convinced? Well, what if I did this?
I'm gonna do a backflip!
That's gonna look so cool, Brickathy!
What are you boys doing?
Brickathy's gonna do a backflip, Grandma!
Are you convinced now? Did the brick feel more alive? I mean, sure, it's still a brick that can't move on its own, but maybe because I put googly eyes on it and gave it a family, you can connect with this brick, and it made you feel emotions. Convincing you that something inanimate is animate is the main goal of the animate ore. They're nothing more than deranged frauds. For the last century, animators have innovated new techniques and styles to this medium, taking it from a spinning wheel that doesn't even use electricity to Spider-Verse. And today, I'm going to talk about all the processes and innovations that have brought the medium of animation to right now. But first, let's go all the way back to the beginning of film, when it was all black and white and people had to put up text whenever they talked. Early on, filmmakers discovered a very simple trick to make anything appear alive in front of a camera. And that simple trick was called... You're filming something, and then stop the camera, and then move the thing slightly, capture a new image, move the thing again, and continue to do that a tedious amount of times. On the film, that thing now magically looked like it move on its own. And with this technique, you could make literally anything appear to be moving. Anything. But some filmmakers took this art form to an extreme level and created whole characters out of clay and a posable metal wire system called an armature. Now animators can sculpt unique characters that bend and pose in much more believable ways. With stop motion, you don't need to hire a real dinosaur or giant monkey to make a movie about a dinosaur or giant monkey. I'm sorry you didn't get the job, Phil. You know, I just had a crazy idea. What if we made our entire puppet's head interchangeable? Now they can make any facial expression and mouth shape possible. We will have to sculpt out hundreds of different heads, though, but, I mean, come on, that'll be fun. That's why we're extreme, baby! Stop-motion movies are still being made and enjoyed to this day, and while new technology does help make the overall process easier, animators are still using the same techniques that were used on King Kong back in the 1920s, where they carefully pose out a character's every movement frame by frame. In order. Stop motion is a medium that I can't even begin to understand how they do, let alone make it look good, you know? Having a stop motion character in gravity-defying poses, making hundreds of different faces, is done solely to make the character feel more alive. And sometimes, to help sell the realism, animators will mimic quirks that only happen in live-action films. I always chuckle when I see a lens flare in an animated movie, because, like, where did you come from? There's not even a camera lens. Unlike me, though, who's always got a camera rolling. Hey, how's it going? Uh-oh. Oh, no! Did you catch that? Did you see the lizard eating a bug? Ooh, we got him. Now let's rewind the clip and pause right here. This lizard moves so fast that the camera can't even capture its movements correctly, and he transmogrifies into an amorphic blob that barely even resembles a lizard. But do not fret, dear viewer. This is called motion blur, and it's absolutely natural. Fast-moving objects are hard to see in real life anyway, so this blurry blob only showing up for one frame actually helps sell the idea that this little guy is moving quickly. If you watch any movie frame by frame, you'll find motion blur everywhere, and you won't even notice. So how do animators who are taking hundreds of still photos handle this naturally occurring phenomenon with things in motion? Easy, they'll draw smear. Animators draw their own blurry blob frame to mimic fast movements. Bodies can stretch, arms can multiply. Basically, we can sneak in nightmares as long as it's only shown for one frame. Smears, while being very fun to draw, can look very weird and goofy on their own. But in the context of the whole shot, you barely even notice they're there. Okay, maybe now you'll notice them, but that's only because I pointed them out. And since animators are bad boys and don't play by the rules, they can make smears out of anything, Even in stop motion, we can sculpt a physical smear frame like how they did in Leica's Paranorman, which, if you haven't seen, is going to be your new favorite movie. Smear frames can be used anytime, anywhere. Unless you were an animator in the 1920s and 30s and you didn't know about them back then. In that case, you would have been animating something called... In the 1920s and 30s, animators were still figuring out some core principles of animation. Turns out there's 12 of them. Smear frames were used sparingly during this time, with animators usually only drawing characters with multiple limbs to show fast movements. The stretchy, wacky, and spiritually ascending smears that you all know and love weren't really used until the 1940s. Rubber hose characters have noodly, almost hose-like limbs that bend in all sorts of anatomically defying ways. Look at Mickey Mouse's noodle arms that I can now legally show you. The reason characters look like this is because drawing noodle arms and not worrying about anatomy is easier to draw. But like, just because something has noodle arms doesn't mean it's bad, you guys. What these animators were able to accomplish with the technology, if you could even call it that, is nothing short of dark magic. And the very same studio that made Steamboat Willie wanted to push the envelope and show the world that animation could be more. It doesn't just have to be noodly characters with Pac-Man eyes. They were going to animate a realistic woman with proportional arms that don't move in weird, exaggerated ways. And oh god, her noodle arms are moving in weird, exaggerated ways. In 1934, Disney released a short called The Goddess of Spring, being their first attempt at animating a character with what was supposed to have real human anatomy. They still had a lot to learn, obviously. Now, animating a quote-unquote anatomically correct human is actually a much harder task than you might realize, and that's because of the uncanny valley. Get more and more human characteristics, we hit an interesting point right here when something looks almost like a human, but is just a little off. Our pattern recognition brain starts setting off alarm bells and go, ugh, something is definitely wrong with that almost human. I am entering fight or flight right now. So if you're trying to make something look as close to a human as possible, but are just a tiny bit off, everything crumbles. The Goddess of Spring was still good practice for Disney because only 3 years later, they released the world's first fully animated feature film, Snow White. Can you really blame Disney for going 6 times over budget to make this movie? I mean, just look at how these human characters are moving. 10 years before Snow White, animated humans looked like this. So going from this to this in only 10 years? How? I can't get over how real these human characters look sometimes. Almost too real. Well, I think you're old enough to learn about the dangers of rotoscoping is the process of taking real-life footage and then manually tracing over every frame, resulting in an animation with unreal levels of realism. And I say unreal derogatorily. You're basically slapping a cartoon filter over live-action footage, but instead of simply slapping, you're spending multiple hours doing mindless and tedious drawing. Rotoscoping is not the same as filming a human actor and then later referencing that footage, like what Disney did for Sleeping Beauty or Alice in Wonderland or any movie ever, because animators use references all the time. People had figured out how to rotoscope other people long before Snow White. So of course Disney, who was trying to convey real human movement, rotoscoped some shots. The problem with rotoscoping is that we start to sneak our way back to the bottom of the uncanny valley. Animated characters often do and should break the laws of physics. They can squash and stretch into weird proportions and be drawn in unique and interesting poses. And look, Snow White is still a masterpiece of a movie. The rotoscoping is fine, you barely notice it. It's good, it's a good movie, and it made Disney a lot of money. Also, how did Walt animate these shots of things reflecting in the water in 1937? What, did they put special glass over paintings to make it look distorted or something? Who would be crazy enough to do that? If you made a whole movie entirely rotoscoped, what you end up with is Ralph Bakshi's The Lord of the Rings. Notice anything off about these characters' movements? Look at how Gandalf moved just a year ago in The Hobbit. Now, Lord of the Rings. Hobbit. Lord of the Rings. Almost every shot in this movie was rotoscoped. And the shots that weren't used live-action footage with a filter over it. I'm not saying that rotoscoping is bad. You just have to use it correctly. A character switching from traditionally animated to rotoscoped is incredibly funny, and always will be. The YouTuber Joel Havier makes very entertaining rotoscope skits that feel like a fever dream, and I mean that underogatorily. And a lot of music videos get away with rotoscoping because, admittedly, rotoscoping is a very cool visual. Now, I wish I could say the first Lord of the Rings movie was a hidden animation gem, but I don't know, it's not on my top 10, I'm sorry. It probably made a lot of nerds in the 70s happy, but thankfully The Lord of the Rings has been adapted into many other forms of media, like video games, Magic the Gathering cards, and anime.
Anime?
They're making a Lord of the Rings anime?
They're making a Lord of the Rings...
You thought Hollywood, California was the only place in the world making moving pictures? Japan's been making their own moving pictures too, and some of them are moving drawings. There are entire college courses on the history of anime, but you're not paying me tuition, so we're gonna have to skip over a couple things. A lot of early anime is now lost media because cinemas didn't preserve film back then, and an earthquake destroyed many studios in 1923. Some Japanese animators created shorts out of paper cutouts because buying thousands of celluloid sheets was too expensive, and they had some very unique character designs. And some Japanese animators took inspiration from Disney and made shorts that looked very similar to America's rubber hose characters. Then, by the 1940s, some major world events happened that got most of the world involved, and both American and Japanese animation studios were affected. But after all that, in 1948, one studio called Japan Animated Films, later bought out by Toei Animation, set out to be the Disney of the East, and they made cartoons about magical schoolgirls, and are still in business to this day and made some other less popular shows. One animator who quit working at Toei created his own company and made an anime based off his comic about a robot boy. Hey, I kind of like that art style of drawing humans with big expressive eyes. Let's do more of that. That same year, another studio made an anime about humans controlling giant robots. I wonder if that's going to inspire a whole new genre. And this guy was commissioned by American studios to make stop-motion Christmas movies like Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. Meaning Rudolph is anime.
Nani?
By the 1960s, Japanese shows started airing on televisions all across the globe, and they continued to make unique and interesting stories with amazing animations that were beloved by billions of people and grew into extremely profitable franchises. Like, I'm talking the most profitable franchise. By the 1970s, Disney was still very much the animated movie gold standard, making big-budgeted movies with family-friendly values. Which is fine to do, kids love bright colors and talking animals that only cartoons can offer, but some studios realized that animation was a medium, not a genre, and made animated movies exclusively for adults. That's part of the reason why the first Lord of the Rings movie was entirely rotoscoped. It wasn't trying to be cartoony and over the top, it was trying to be real and gritty. Animation could be anything for anyone of any age. But really, if you think about it, there hadn't been a new way of showing people moving drawings since those very early days of black and white stop motion. In stop motion, you take a picture, move a figure, take a picture, move a figure. In cell animation, you take a picture, move a cell, take a picture, move a cell. Everything's just been a series of pictures moved manually in front of a camera this whole time? Always has been.
You've got mail.
Oh. It says the entire animation and film industry is about to be flipped onto its head forever and ever. Yeah, right. I'm sure this whole computer thing is just... Ever-increasing advancements of technology, we were able to achieve increasingly advanced... achievements, like putting a guy on the moon, and drawing silly little cartoons more efficiently. Gone are the days of having to physically draw everything out on paper and underpay a team of hundreds of pretty girls to hand-paint every frame. Now we can use this fancy new computer to render everything out for us. All we have to do is create a real-life mold of our real-life human hand, then draw 350 triangles onto that hand, then manually measure out the X, Y, and Z coordinates of 800 different data points. No, come on, this is gonna be so much faster. Put that pencil down. Now we just program in a couple of keyframes and we get... Huh. We still don't have the processing power to render everything out. Oh, I know. We'll just point this long exposure camera at the computer screen. Get these art supplies out of here. This is the future. And when everything's finished rendering, we'll get this. A whole human hand moving on its own without having to draw a single frame. This process is exactly what Utah University student Ed Catmull did in 1972. And while it might not have been more efficient than drawing everything out by hand, it showed that computers were capable of rendering out three-dimensional animations. This was made after we landed a man on the moon, by the way, so don't tell me this was CGI. As the computer's processing power grew exponentially, more and more filmmakers started seeing the benefits of using computer-generated images in movies. A decade after Catmull digitized his hand, films like Tron showcased characters racing on mind-boggling computer-generated light cycles. This might look, you know, bad by today's standards, but these graphics were something that audiences had never seen before. Plus, the movie takes place inside of a computer, so this is probably what people thought the insides of a computer looked like anyways. At the time, computers did a great job at creating rigid, geometric shapes, and animators used that to their advantage. Characters would still have to be animated traditionally on cells, but objects that weren't going to change shape, like black cauldrons, could now magically fly in circles around our characters. Disney really showed off the computer's rendering power during the climax of The Great Mouse Detective, when these two rodents fought each other inside a clock tower and all the spinning gears were generated by a computer. Animators can now make any complex shape move in a three-dimensional space without having to draw a single frame. I mean, you know, except for the characters, they still very much had to draw those. Computer graphics were here to stay as Disney integrated more of them into movies like these Cars in Oliver and Company or Eric's ship in The Little Mermaid, and then they stopped using cells entirely. Starting with The Rescuers Down Under, Disney no longer used cells and made movies entirely digitally with a program called CAPS. So if you ever wanted to own a cell of Joanna the Lizard eating an egg, that's too bad because they don't exist, which fucking sucks because Joanna was the best goddamn lizard Disney ever made. Don't touch me! TV shows and anime still use cells till about the year 2000-ish, but eventually everyone switched to digital. Now to color a frame, all you had to do was... So computers were great at making rigid, non-flexible shapes, but has anyone ever tried to make... A group of computer scientists who were working for a small indie director named George Lucas were taking this art form to an extreme level and created whole characters completely generated by a computer. Then a small entrepreneur named Steve Jobs hired those computer scientists and made his own company, Pixar. Yes, Steve Jobs was one of the founders of Pixar, and he originally created the company to sell a high-end computer powerful enough to render 3D animations, but no one bought the computer because it cost $135,000. So the team scrapped the computer selling idea and just stuck with making computer-generated cartoons, but they soon discovered a unique problem. The computer had a hard time getting textures right, and everything, including babies, ended up looking like it was made out of plastic. So the team's clever workaround this dilemma was to make a movie with the entire cast of characters actually made out of plastic. Or ants. You know, people don't know what ants are supposed to look like. It's fine. Pixar continued to develop new processes to get the computer to generate unique textures and lighting, like simulating human hair or fur, or lighting things in such a way to make everything appear underwater. No other studio was pioneering computer-generated images like Pixar was. And then in 2006, Disney bought Pixar. But I don't think Steve was too upset because 1 year later, he achieved his dream of selling a high-end computer. This time being a little more affordable. A little. Now, I want to squash any misconception that computers do all the animating. Animators still have to manually pose a character's body and facial expression off of a character's... build a complex system of nodes and bones that let them manually pose a character into any position possible. It's kind of like a digital stop-motion puppet, or an actual puppet without any of the strings. All CG characters are just their own complicated version of Pinocchio. Using character rigs is really the only way of animating things in three dimensions, But it's not like we can use rigs in 2D animation. Here in the second dimension, we don't have a fancy Z-axis. 2D animation can only be done by hand-drawing 24 new images every second. Except we don't, I lied. Even all the way back when characters were animated with paper and cells, animators wouldn't draw a whole new frame every frame. Usually, they would animate pieces of a character and paint each piece on its own cell. You remember Robin? They only drew one body and 5 different heads. But because cells are a physical object that get harder to handle the more you have, animators could only break a character up into 2 or 3 different pieces. But now, thanks to the computer, we can break up a character into as many pieces as we'd like. Like 4. Or 5. Or 173! Have you ever played around with the free and revolutionary animation software Pivot Stick Figure Animator? If you're the type of person that says, "Oh, I suck at drawing. I can't even draw stick figures," then you're gonna love this program. On Pivot, you're given a pre-made stick figure or horse that have these joints that can be posed however you like. Each of these stick figure's limbs are just individual pieces that are connected in such a way that make it look like a stick figure. So to make these animations, we're not really drawing anything, we're just manually posing out a character like a digital puppeteer. I wasn't saying you can make a rig out of 173 pieces just to be funny. Because that's how many pieces I'm made out of. That's right, me! Even I'm a rig! And can I tell you a secret? Most TV shows use rigs too. Of course, hand-drawn traditional animation is still used to make these shows. It's not a lost art form or anything. But rigs are super useful at making still pretty high-quality levels of animation, but at a much cheaper cost. And as we all know, TV animation has to create more animation per budget. But maybe rig animation still isn't as cost-effective as you'd like. And maybe you're not a fan of the complicated puppet look, and you want something that looks more human. Well, there's one more animation process we can try, called motion. An actor inside one of these dorky ping-pong suits, a computer can pinpoint and record that actor's exact movements. Now we can take those movements, slap a cartoon character's model over it, and we get an animation that looks like shit. Motion capture is the rotoscoping of 3D animation. It cuts costs, but the results are too human, and we're back at the bottom of the uncanny valley. That's why the kids from the Polar Express look so nightmarish, because they are following the exact movements of Tom Hanks. Yes, Tom Hanks, the adult man, did some motion capture for the small, nameless hero boy from the Polar Express. There's probably a reason we haven't made a fully motion capture cartoon in over 10 years. Because it looks weird. But I mean, that didn't stop one of these movies from winning an Oscar in animation. And before you ask, no, it wasn't Monster House or Tintin. It was Mars Needs Moms, duh. Just like rotoscoping, motion capture can be used correctly. Computer-generated characters acting side-by-side real human actors look decent. It's not that jarring that these creatures who exist in a live-action world are moving just like live-action people. And let's not forget all the VTubers who use motion capture technology to bring their jiggly assets to life. No matter what method someone uses to try and convince you that something else is alive, I think is incredibly cool, and I hope you think it's cool too. But maybe you don't think it's cool, and you don't care about animation, and you just put this video on in the background while you were cleaning. That's totally fine, I do that all the time. I just like learning about how all my favorite animated pieces of media get created, because it's not always the same process. And I think it's great that new technology is allowing anyone to express themselves in whatever way possible. A person expressing themselves. Those are the 3 key words here. From the big studios that are just now pioneering new and interesting styles with digital animation, to the indie studios that have access to incredible technology which allow anyone working from their bedrooms in their pajamas to create some truly masterpieces of animation. So, if you're the type of person that likes to trick people into thinking that something is alive, then you deserve all the respect in the world. In fact, here are some cool people that made the animation in this video possible. Hello, you just made it to the end of this video. I hope you enjoyed it. I'm still trying to figure out this VTuber model, so I'm over-enunciating my words. The technology behind this is beyond my comprehension. If you're still deciding what to get for the holidays, then great news. We have mystery boxes over on my website, so you can leave the deciding up to us. Now, if you'll excuse me, I'm gonna go take a nap. Are you still watching? Oh yeah, she's coming back. One time, me and a group of buddies were driving through Texas, and we passed a building that looked like the Whataburger corporate office. Just to be sure, I checked my phone and discovered, yeah, we did just drive past the Whataburger corporate office. But what I found interesting was that the building had hundreds of one-star reviews. After some investigation, I found that these reviews weren't coming from the Whataburger corporate staff. No, these reviews were from once loyal customers who in one way or another had a negative experience at a Whataburger and were going to take this issue to the top. Reading people's wordy laments about their terrible fast food experiences has become a hobby of mine. And it's not just Whataburger. Every fast food corporate office has hundreds of one-star reviews. These people have been wronged by a billion-dollar company, and the only way they can get back at them is calling them stupid. The team at blah 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 have no intelligence whatsoever. I ordered 3 large lemonades, and all 3 spilled in the inside of my car because the cup holder was way too flimsy. I told the manager named Josh, and all he said he could do was say he's sorry. Sorry isn't going to clean up the mess caused by their stupidity! This guy spilled 3 lemonades all over his car, and instead of going, "Ah, I'm so stupid," he went, "Ah, Josh is stupid." This just goes to show that you could do your job perfectly and still have angry customers. Also, what did you expect Josh to do? Hey, I just spilled all that lemonade you gave me in that cup holder. Oh my goodness, how could I be so stupid? I forgot to turn off spill mode. Bring your car out back and I'll get a straw and then I'll suck it dry.
No need to thank me. That's what fast food employees are for.
I can't talk about fast food without bringing up a small local sandwich shop in my area. So here are some of my favorite one-star Subway reviews. We went to the location in blah blah blah. We had 30 minutes to close. I know, sucks, but there was a huge regional wrestling match and there were some starving boys. I walked in and let them know we had 20 sandwiches to order. We didn't have crazy expectations. Substituting meat, forget tomatoes if you're out. We don't need toasted, let's just feed these boys. 9 sandwiches in, the sweetest girl who was making our food said her manager said, "Shut it down," and they're not making the rest of the order. The manager had the employee in tears, and 9 boys didn't get food. I was mind blown. We offered big tips, gave free oil changes to employees working hard to make money. I run a mechanic shop and stay late for customer a lot. We didn't have crazy expectations. We just wanted a whole catering order 30 minutes before close. I know some people are going to be thinking, you're a business that's still open, so you have to do what the customer says. But I want those same people to ask their mother to make them 20 sandwiches at 9:30 p.m. and let me know what she says. And if those 9 boys were still upset, they should have just suplexed the manager into a table and then made the cold cut combo themselves. I placed an order online for 2 footlongs. I walked in to pick up my order, and I was thankful I didn't leave a tip. I received 1 footlong, but ordered 2. It's very clear on the receipt that was attached to the package. I showed it to the woman working behind the counter, and she laughed and said, "Oh, I didn't see that. Let me get that for you." Not sure why she missed that. Has never happened to me before. Is she on something, or does she not know how to read English? I had to stand there and wait for her to make the other footlong. And then this person continues to write a whole 500-word manifesto. Are they on drugs? Can they read English? Jeez. Do you think this reviewer is going to tell their grandkids about this story? And then I had to stand next to the sneeze guard for 2 minutes. Okay, Grandma, can we go? And they forgot the mayo! There are a whole bunch of lengthy reviews just like this. And for these types of reviews, I, like, start thinking about these people psychologically. I feel like these people either have something else going on or nothing else going on. I'm sorry that your lunch was ruined, but if this is the biggest problem in your life, you're doing all right. And maybe this wouldn't have happened if you left a tip. I went to the location at blah, blah, blah. The guy Frank there needs to take some customer service classes. He is not friendly, and when I told him he should be more friendly to his customers, he told me to go ahead and call whoever I wanted to complain. Frank, I love you. You don't need to take customer service classes. You need to be teaching them. IDK, who was working at around 9:45 on May 17th, but somebody needs to give them a hug. I pull up to the window to pay, and there was three girls standing there doing nothing. One of them mumbled my total and stuck out her hand. I gave her my card, and she did her thing. Then she handed me a crumpled mess of a bag and two drinks with, like, zero ice. No have a nice night, no thanks for stopping in, not even a hello. IDK, if all three of those girls lives together and somebody ran over their dog or something, but all three of them looked like they absolutely hated being there, and me ordering my meal was the biggest inconvenience they could have experienced. I feel so bad for these workers, they need a hug, but also screw them one star. I can't believe this McDonald's took my review down, but that's okay, I will recite it. They had no barbecue sauce for their nuggets the whole Memorial Day weekend. For all you barbecue sauce lovers out there, when you went to this location on any of those days and asked for barbecue sauce and you were told they didn't have any more, you must have felt crushed like I did. Like, what was the point of ordering nuggets and finding out they didn't have barbecue sauce afterwards? Why didn't they disclose that fact before ordering the nuggets and paying for it? I'll tell you why. Because they wanted to take advantage of us, just to get that sale. What, the employees do take the barbecue sauce to their homes to use for their own Memorial Day weekend barbecues? This is one memorable, unfavorable moment that will be remembered for years to come. You know, there are many who are barbecue sauce lovers out there that went through the same feeling I did when I ordered three 20-piece nuggets just to find out afterwards they didn't have any barbecue sauce. Like, if you agree. I don't want to jump to any conclusions, but do you think they're out of barbecue sauce because the world's number one barbecue sauce lover keeps ordering there? Going through all the trouble to write a review and then recite the review again, all because they were out of barbecue sauce, seems like a lot, but 60 nuggets with no sauce on a national holiday is a tragedy, I'll give you that. I love that this guy didn't even consider that they were just out of sauce and instead went full conspiracy mode, thinking the employees were hoarding the sauce for their own barbecue. You gotta have barbecue sauce for your barbecue. It's in the name. I'm not going to act like every fast food restaurant is in the right all the time, because I've had my fair share of terrible fast food experiences too. I once ordered a burger from Sonic, and they gave me the burger with no meat. And I went, dang, well, that's how my day is gonna go, I guess. I didn't write a lengthy review to hopefully be seen by someone at corporate. I don't know. I got other problems. If reading these reviews has taught you anything, it's that these fast food workers have to deal with all sorts of customers going through all sorts of problems. So please be the customer who shows a little compassion. They are handling your food after all. Leave a like if you agree. My child works for Whataburger, hasn't been paid since December 2nd. Today is 1-4 and still no paychecks. We've been told lies saying paycheck is coming to the store, then FedEx is delivering it, and still nothing. He's only 18, so I feel like they're trying to get over on him. Not to mention the shift manager Liz is having an affair with some of the employees. Yo, what? A burger? Thank you all for watching the video. If you enjoyed it, then I highly recommend reading some of these corporate office fast food reviews yourself. They're a real treat to read. Just some of the passion that these people have needs to be studied. Obviously, not everyone who leaves a one-star review is an obnoxious Karen, but the ones who go out of their way to review a corporate office are some of my favorites. Thanks again for watching, and wear your seatbelt. I assume that 90% of what I see online is just trolling. You see a video, find out it's AI, you got trolled. You click a link and hear the first two notes of this song, that's trolling. But when I read this comment on one of my comics, I wasn't entirely sure if it was trolling. Is Odds One Out onto comics now? Is Odds One Out onto comics now? Well, the let me tell you. A quick history lesson of Odds One Out. Comics have always had a huge influence on my humor, literacy, and even the style of this channel. In fact, you can still see some of the effects comics had on this channel to this day. Let's start at the very beginning. Growing up, my mom had a rule where I could only go on the family computer for however long I read a book for. James, what are you doing on the family computer? Oh, just a bit of trolling. Alright, you need to look at a book now. But then, I started reading comics during computer time. I stumbled upon so many unique and interesting webcomics, and I was able to read them all completely for free right on the family computer. And by filling up both my reading and computer time with nothing but comics, it was only a matter of time before I started my own webcomic. My webcomic would be about a family of three boys. And let me tell you, these boys were a crazy bunch. Remember the rules while I'm gone. Last time Jake bought a hot dog stand and a snow cone machine. All right, I'm off. I don't want any funny business. Guys, how about we discuss my computer privileges over some snow cones? And I wanted the name of this comic to describe the wacky personality traits that made these boys the odd ones. That's it. That's the name of the comic. The Odd Ones Out. Which was already taken, and in 2 seconds I went, oh, easy fix. So, to answer the question, is Odds One Out on the comics now? Who do you think the Odds One is? It's these three. To be fair, probably no one knows that these three boys are the odd number ones out, because for the first couple years of posting comics, about zero people were reading them. Except for Mom. It was time for a rebrand. I figured, brevity is the soul of wit. Plus, it was easier to draw. I kept making comics to an audience of zero people for years, when eventually, after throwing enough spaghetti at the wall, one of the spaghetti stuck. The spaghetti being this comic, which I will now read to you. Do you like the book I loaned you? Ah! Oh, you're at that part. Since my art style was ever-changing, I would often update my profile picture pretty regularly, usually just using screenshots from the comics. And one day, I made this comic about a guy doing a cannonball into a pool, and then he, killed the guy. And then I thought, this pose in panel one would kind of be a good profile picture. It's square. And that ended up being the last time I ever updated my profile picture. Now you know why my icon is wearing a swimsuit, even though I'm always commando. You can actually still see the diving board in the corner of my icon, too. Wait, actually, what's going on with this diving board? Why is the ladder going into the pool? Is this AI? Eventually, after doing comics long enough, I made the switch to YouTube, and I named my channel, get this, The Odd Ones Out Comic. I was still so tied to making comics that I basically treated my channel as, like, a moving comic strip. I actually kept the word comic in my username for so long that it's printed on my million subscriber plaque. Also, yeah, plaques used to look like this. I took a break making comics in 2017, but that's not to say I ever lost my passion in making comics. When YouTube Shorts started to roll around, I turned some of my very early comics into vertical animations. And my comic-making itch continued to grow that in 2023, me and my team started making comics again. And I've really been enjoying creating them for all of you. So, B. Rarard, circling back to your question, yes, Odds One Out has always been onto comics now. You know, Virard, back when I had to read to earn computer time, the only books that I liked to read were comics. And my mom, who was just desperate for me to look at any kind of book, said, fine, whatever. And now I'm going to help the people of the world earn more computer time because I'm releasing my first ever comic book. Wow. This book contains a collection of some of my favorite comics along with some brand new, never before seen comics.
Wow.
Turn this boring coffee table into a bright, saturated one.
Cool.
Put it on your IKEA bookshelf to show everyone your vast collection of literature.
Neat.
You must be smart because you know how to read. But even if you don't know how to read, you're still in luck. Watch the magic of animation come to life as every book comes pre-equipped with a flipbook animation. Look at him go. My comics were what launched this channel into existence, and it's super cool seeing them in print for the very first time. Check the link in the description to get yourself a copy for right now. And a final special shout out to you, Virard, for asking all the important questions. Check your DMs so I can send you a free copy. And to everyone else, thank you for the support and wear your seatbelt. Oh my my goodness, he said the thing! Wow, he said it! Wow. The older I get, the more I've realized how much time I have to set aside just to clean. I'll ask a friend, what'd you get up to last weekend? And they'll think for a bit, and then say, I just cleaned. Crap, I gotta do that too. I've seen people, therapists, and the elderly all talk about how everyone's too gosh darn connected to their cell phones. How we don't allow ourselves a single moment to be present or alone with our thoughts. But when it comes to cleaning, I think you should fill that void up with as much noise as possible. Cleaning is such a boring and monotonous task that even people in the 1700s would pass the time by singing to themselves. And while these pilgrims didn't have endless podcasts to listen to, you have YouTube videos. Like this one. So I want this video to serve as the noise you listen to while you get up and clean something. Hopefully hearing a YouTuber talk about cleaning for the next 10 minutes will motivate you to start chipping away at that mess you've been putting off for months. I'm not asking you to drop everything and do a 3-hour deep clean of your closet, but half-assing something is still better than no-assing something. And I think you'd be surprised with how nice you can make a space look in only 10 minutes. I want to give the caveat that I'm not a clean freak. I've lived in a college dorm with a bunch of other guys. My sink is most likely full of dishes as you're watching this. And if anyone needs to do a 3-hour deep clean of their closet, it's me. And I also know how hard it can be to look at a room that's in such a bleak and disarray state that you get so overwhelmed by the mess that you don't even know where to start cleaning. So you never do, which perpetuates this never-ending cycle that makes your entire space and mental health messier. Luckily, I have a solution. If you don't even know where to begin dealing with the mess, the first step to cleaning any room is taking out the trash. That's it. That's all you have to do. All those empty bottles and boxes, get them out of there. Whenever I clean, I like to play this fun little game that I know you've never played before because it's a game I invented. It's called... Is that where that goes? To play this game, all you have to do is point at an object and go... Is that where that goes? And if that object is where it goes, then you're good. You don't have to do anything. But if that object isn't where it goes, then you put it where it goes. And you beat the game once everything that's going to or needed to go goes where it goes. So while you're grabbing trash bags and flattening out boxes, let me explain why I found cleaning to be so important in my adult life. I really have to thank my parents for distilling, I wouldn't call it a love for cleaning, but rather a tolerance for it. Growing up, my parents would print out physical job charts for the week, and every day us kids did all of our chores, we would earn $1. However, any single chore we didn't do, we would lose $1. Meaning, it was possible for us to come out of a week of doing chores in the red. My parents were earning money and teaching us about capitalism because my bed wasn't made. Still owe them 35 bucks. We were able to earn some money back doing Saturday chores. This is when we did a deeper clean like vacuuming or mopping. But Saturday chores didn't even hold a candle to the absolute worst chores we had to do, which were the dreaded... Company is coming over chores. For some reason, whenever company was on their merry way, it was vital that rooms said company would never even enter in the first place were spotless. This one time, I think my mom was hosting like book club or something, I finished mopping my bathroom, which was not a bathroom that anyone in book club would be using, by the way, and my mom did her usual room cleanliness inspection and said, I think you should wipe that bucket down too. She was making us clean the cleaning instruments. Do you want me to vacuum the vacuum next? However, if it wasn't for all those chores my parents forced me to do, I feel like cleaning would have become something I dreaded doing instead of something I can actually wind down the day with. I look forward to folding laundry and putting something on the TV because I feel like I did something productive while watching cartoons. And since I don't live with mom anymore, I don't have to clean my bucket. Which now doubles as a toilet. Cleaning has become such an integral part of my life that cleaning other people's spaces is how I show my affection. I'm about to put one of my best friends on complete blast here, but I think he'll be okay with it because he constantly asks me to put him in videos. I'm doing a video that's a puppet show with two bricks.
Can I voice one of the bricks?
Okay. I recently visited one of my close friends, Infamous Swoosh, at his place in upstate New York. He's 24, living on his own for the first time with three other dudes, and the second I stepped into his house, I went, oh, this is a guy's house. I don't think a woman's been in here in, like, ever. What really sealed it for me was the bathroom not having a trash can, but rather a loose trash bag leaning up against a wall. And it was full. I hadn't planned for this to be on the itinerary of my New York trip, but after seeing how dire Swoosh's living conditions were, I decided to take him to his local Target to get him some necessary supplies. I originally set out to get him three things: a trash can, trash bags, and a handheld vacuum. But as we were walking through Target, we passed the broom aisle, and I asked, "You have a broom, right?" And his shoulders started to slowly rise into a shrug, and I went, "Dude!" Then we passed the Brita filter aisle, and I said, "You have one of these, right? You haven't just been drinking tap water this whole time, right?"
I mean, the sink's right there.
You know, Swoosh, normally when people move into a new place, they do a big Target run to get all the necessary cleaning supplies for their house.
What do you mean? I did do a Target run. Didn't you see that buffalo painting in my office?
Up until this point, Swoosh had been drying all of his dishes with paper towels, which I guess is good because I just assumed he was eating everything in his bare hands like a Neanderthal, so I think I'm saving him money in the long run. I'm really about to show my age here, but since I'm doing a whole video about cleaning, I just need to gush real quick about my favorite piece of cleaning equipment. This was one of the original three items I set out to get Swoosh before I knew how dire his situation was. This is completely unsponsored, by the way, but the Bissell Pet Hair Eraser Hand Vacuum has divided my life into two moments: the time spent before I had this vacuum and the time spent after. I love this vacuum so much that I've gifted it to friends on three separate occasions. Now, this next piece of advice I used to roll my eyes at, but after I started doing it, I've really been enjoying it. And that is to make your bed first thing in the morning. I used to think, why do I need to make my bed? I'm just going to get it messy again. But making your bed is having the first thing you do in the morning be something that benefits your future self. It helps set the tone for the day. And if you are able to complete that small task, then you're probably more likely to complete other more important tasks. No, making my bed didn't magically fix all my problems, but no matter what kind of day I was having, it was always nice ending it in a clean bed. Obviously, there's more to life than cleaning. I would know. I own all the Warrior Cat books. But I think everyone should enjoy the space they live in. I feel like a lot of us fall into a bad habit of dreading to do a task longer than it would take for us to just do said task. I definitely can be like that sometimes, but if you've been following along and been cleaning while this video played in the background, while your room might not be completely spotless, I hope you can see how much of a difference you made in only 10 minutes. Now imagine how much you can do in 20 minutes. Isn't cleaning while watching YouTube videos so fun? Isn't doing tasks so accomplishing? So if you need to clean, go clean! Go clean your bedroom! Go clean your kitchen! Unclog that toilet! The world is your oyster! Get out there and clean! I'm terrible at decorating. Not in the sense that I have terrible taste, but rather I'm terrible doing anything. I have this debilitating habit where right before I hang a picture up on a wall, I'll go, "Yeah, this spot is perfect. I'll just set this on the floor real quick so I remember this is the spot I'm going to hang it up." And then that picture will stay on the floor for 6 months until I finally do hang it up, which takes less than 5 minutes to do so. Sometimes though, I'll get into a home decoration overhaul kind of mood. Like recently, I've come into the possession of 30 Warrior Cat books. Somehow. And instead of putting them in a closet next to my 30 Animorph books, I decided it was finally time to buy a bookshelf and put all of my classic literature neatly on display. After perusing multiple furniture websites and getting overwhelmed with the massive amount of choices and styles and letting my algorithm know I was desperate for a new shelving unit, I had a sudden moment of clarity. I am spending more time thinking about shelves than I've ever wanted to in my entire life. I just need something to hold my cat books. Why am I overcomplicating this? I should check old reliable IKEA. Ooh, this looks nice. The Calyx. Now, I could just pay to have this thing delivered straight to my door, or I could go on a fun adventure filled with meatballs. The older you get, the more fun going to IKEA gets. Any piece of furniture you can possibly imagine is at IKEA, with a ridiculous name. In my head, this was going to be the quickest IKEA trip of my life. I would eat some meatballs that are so delicious you don't even need spaghetti to go with them. Then I would find my Calyx and take it home. If I had two birds right now, I could totally kill them with one stone. Or meatball. But if you know anything about IKEA, a quick IKEA trip is an oxymoron. The first red flag that this trip was going awry was that as I was standing in the checkout line with my food on my lunch tray, I couldn't help but notice that even though I asked for the 12 meatball meal, I only counted 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 meatballs on my plate. Now I had to ask myself an important question. Am I the type of guy who will step out of line, walk back to the server, and say, I don't know how you Swedes count, but here in the States. And before I even finished the hypothetical, I figured, no, I'm not that type of guy. But then, like, more minor inconveniences kept happening. After I completed my incomplete meal, I went to fill up my water bottle at one of those water filling stations. But when I put my bottle in, the flow of water, like, curved to the side. But then when I moved my bottle over to where the water was going, it wouldn't be under the sensor, so I had to do this whole dance where I kept activating and moving my water bottle, and by the time my bottle was half full, I remember thinking, I wish this machine just didn't work. Because then I would just go, oh, guess it doesn't work. But now it's making me work for my hydration. But whatever. This is all just part of the IKEA experience and why it's such a magical place. Right? I skipped grabbing a shopping cart and started blazing through all the neatly designed showrooms that I'm usually a huge sucker for.
Wow. I wish my bedroom looked like a Scandinavian child's bedroom.
I'm not doing any of that today. I had one item on my mind, and that was the one and only, easy to pronounce, Calyx. Now imagine my surprise when I turned a corner and saw an entire showroom called the Calyx Collection. Maybe if I had been more observant and saw the giant Calyx display at the front of the store, or just looked on the website for 2 more seconds, I would have learned that Calyx is like the name of a type of bookshelf. And they come in all these different shapes and sizes, and oh no, I'm overwhelmed with choices again. I saw they were also selling these cubbies that could go into the shelves, and I thought, now I gotta get a cart. If you don't know, IKEA is a one-way street. Arrows illuminate the floor, indicating the flow of traffic. And even though I was robbed of a meatball, I was still willing to respect the rules of the road, and I did a full lap around the store. And I'm super glad I put in the work to fill up my water bottle, because this mega store was a lot more mega than I remember. I kept following the arrows, but I swear they were making me go in circles. I am not surprised that there is a never-ending IKEA SCP, because as you walk through a regular IKEA, you definitely get worried that this place will never end. But the real problem going through all the showrooms twice was that it doubled my chances to see a piece of furniture and go, oh, I actually could use that. There has got to be a Swedish word for going to IKEA for one item and then leaving with $1,000 worth of furniture. There was an end table that I swear had a spotlight shining directly on it. I could hear Swedish angels singing. This end table would be perfect for my printer, which is currently on the floor. So after 2 laps of the showroom, I headed to the giant warehouse to pick up my stuff, and there were these shelf dividers I wanted, which were ironically at the very back of this long shelf themselves. And by this point in my journey, I was kinda done playing by IKEA's rules, so I just
climbed up in there and got him myself. What was I supposed to do? Ask someone for help and make them crawl up in there? No. Now, that amazing end table that I wanted for my printer had to be picked up in the order pickup area for some reason. I guess they had it in the super secret employee only warehouse. So I showed the guy my receipt, and my name appeared on a screen along with an estimated time my order would be ready, which was in 10 minutes. So I waited 10 minutes, and the guy never called my name. And I thought, I'm not bothered by this. It was an estimate. It's fine being a few minutes late. Then more time passed. And by this point, it had been 10 minutes after my estimated 10-minute wait time. So I go up to the guy and said, listen, I can let the meatball slide. But did you forget about me? And he was like, oh, yeah, we're just waiting on someone who can operate a forklift. Do you want me to climb up there? I added 45 minutes to my quickest IKEA trip to get something I came into the store not originally wanting. I didn't even measure if my printer would fit, so I was kind of taking a gamble there. But good news, it totally fits. So, however, even with all those minor inconveniences I had to deal with, something happened in that IKEA that really stuck out to me and, dare I say, made the whole trip worth it. After I had done my first lap of the showroom and secured a shopping cart, I saw this middle-aged woman with who I'm assuming was her mom in a wheelchair, and she was grabbing all these small items in her bare hands, and even though I had traveled very far for the shopping cart, I asked her, do you need a shopping cart?
Oh yes, that would be very helpful, thank you.
I'm doing a voice, that's not how she sounded. After I gave her mine, I did just turn around and went against the flow of traffic to grab another shopping cart. I'm only running on 11 meatballs here, I'm not doing that a third time. But then later, when I was down in the warehouse, I was about to put this big box into my cart when that same woman just so happened to be there and asked, do you need any help? And it made me realize that a simple act of kindness can be so meaningful to someone that it can completely change the type of day they're having. Admittedly, I did end up putting that box back because I realized it was in the wrong color. I'm sorry for making you crawl up in there, Grandma. Sometimes we get so wrapped up in decorating our room or scrolling on our phone that we forget the real world is out there. So go out and do something nice for someone today. It'll make both of you feel a lot better. And if you have any pictures just leaning up against a wall, go hang them up right now. It'll take like 2 seconds. A Pokemon Nuzlocke is a set of rules that turn a normal playthrough of Pokemon into a hardcore playthrough of Pokemon. You're only allowed to catch the first Pokemon you see per route, and if any of them faint, they actually don't live anymore, and you can never use them again. The game I will be Nuzlocking will be Pokemon Ruby. Not because I'm copying Jaden, but because Gen 3 is my favorite generation, and out of the three games, Ruby was the one I played as a kid and bought with my own money. It was $40. Imagine paying that much for a copy of the game now. Also, full disclosure, I've seen other PokeTubers who have a deep, uncanny knowledge of this game and use calculators to make the best, most optimal plays. But I'm not quite at that level yet, so I might make choices that some could consider suboptimal.
I thought grass was, like, super effective against water. Why is he super effective against me?
But if you can forgive me and look past all that, then let's get out of this truck and start our adventure.
Let's see. Someone's already picked Torchic, and when I played this as a kid, I picked Treecko. So that means we're left with Kipmud!
After defeating my rival's Treecko, I headed to Oldale Town and caught my first Pokemon that would be joining our team, Floof the Poochyena.
I'm guessing naming Pokemon after pets is very common in Nuzlocke.
By the way, this is how Floof's very first fight went.
Oh! Oh! Oh my god.
Hey! Do you want to learn how to catch Pokemon?
No.
I'm good.
Well, that's too bad. First, you want to get him weak by throwing tiny rocks at him.
Traveling through Route 104, I caught
a Zigzagoon.
Igzy the Zigzagoon. I'm probably not going to train her up or anything, but she will be useful teaching useless HMs to. What's that, Igzy? You have an ability where you pick up random objects? And you picked up a revive? Oh, Igzy. I can't use these. Wandering through Petalburg Woods, some guy asked me if I'd seen any Pokemon named
Shroomish.
The main reason Gen 3 is my favorite is because the best Pokemon ever, Breloom, makes his debut in this game. Why, if I found a Shroomish in this forest, I would probably react like this.
This guy was being truthful.
I named Shroomish Goat because not only is he the greatest of all time, but because I was also working on this other video about goats, so I had a lot of goats on the mind. We made it to Rustboro Town and challenged Roxanne, the rock-type gym leader, but thankfully we picked the water starter, so, you know, Kidmup, do your thing. I caught a Talo on Route 116, and keeping with the naming Pokemon after pets theme, I named him RE2. Not to spoil anything, but don't get too attached to RE2, Jaden. We sailed to Juford Town and saw that the second gym was a fighting-type gym, so that meant fighting-type weakness. It was RE2's time to shine.
He's, like, actually a higher level. I didn't like that. I didn't like that. He's too high of a level.
Despite being a lower level, we decided to wing it and managed to defeat everyone's Pokemon, only having to tap out at Brawly's Makahuita, which Kidmup mopped the floor with. Hey, when did you start walking on two legs, Kidmup? The next HM we learn is this terrible move, Flash. The only thing Flash is good for is lighting up a dark cave that technically isn't even required to progress through the game if you know where you're going. I, however, do not. Currently, Goat is the only one on the team who can learn Flash. But I'm like 80% sure once a Pokemon learns an HM move, they can't unlearn it. So I really don't want to teach this S-tier Pokemon an unforgettable F-tier move. Oh boy, an Abra! I bet he can learn Flash. Oh boy, a Zubat! Okay, I'm kind of fudging the rules here. This Zubat wasn't technically the first Pokemon I saw on this route, but does it even count as an encounter if all you do is look at a Pokemon and then they teleport away?
Excuse me?
Look, I just need this useless Pokemon to learn this unrequired move. Zubat, I'm calling you Mr. Flash and immediately teaching you...
No!
Goat, you can learn Flash.
Yay!
After clearing out Team Magma from a museum, we were ready to take on Watson, the electric-type gym leader. Luckily, we picked the water ground starter, so... Kidmup, do your thing. Now what? Do I go here? Here? How did I get here? During my wandering, both the Pokemon I named after pets evolved into bigger versions of themselves, and Goat learned Headbutt.
Can I get rid of Flash?
No!
Hey, lady, I'm kind of lost, so I'm entering random houses and asking NPCs where I should go.
Oh, you have Harbor Mail? I'll trade you that for my coin case.
Coin case?
You know, for gambling.
Gambling? Listen, I don't have a problem. The reason I'm this excited is because one of the prizes you can win at the casino is a Pokemon. A Pokemon that may help me build the perfect team. So, before I checked what the prizes actually were, I bought 500 coins for a measly 10,000 Pokédollars.
Just TMs? Dolls? I just wasted a lot of money, didn't I?
Good news, though. Goat evolved into his perfect form and learned Mach Punch.
Right.
Eventually, I talked to the right NPC, taught Igzy Rock Smash, and while exploring a fiery path, I caught my first fire-type Pokemon.
Okay.
Numel.
Let's go, man.
Even though Numels can be found in the desert, have a big hump on their back, and evolve into something called Camerupt, for some reason, I never looked at this Pokemon and thought, camel. I always thought,
fire cow. So that's why I named her Cooked Beef. Then, on Route 114, we encountered a Zangoose.
Hello!
I have no clue what this Pokemon does, but it looks way cooler than all the Oddishes and tiny birds I kept running into, so it had to be awesome. Cooked Beef, the 9 levels you have on this goose are more than enough to weaken it. Hit him with an ever-
Oh, please don't. Oh!
Cooked Beef! So, my only fire type died to a quick attack that did 50 damage. Zangoose, or should I say Beef Eater, you can join the team for now, but just know, we could have killed you at any point. It was a challenge not to kill you. We headed up a mountain and fought Maxie, the leader of Team Magma, who had his own Floof Pokemon, which Goat took care of, and he had his own evolved Cooked Beef. I sure wish I had one of those on the team. Hey, Beef Eater, why don't you make yourself useful and fight that Crobat? Okay, that's kind of cool. As we headed down the mountain, who did I encounter but...
Who's the new Pokemon?
Another Numel. Immediately, I abandoned Beef Eater to make room for... Return of King. Before we take on gym number 4, I think I figured out a way to get Goat to forget the move Flash without having to beat him over the head with a 2x4. A little Pidgey told me that Goat was about to learn a new move at his next level. So by placing him in the Pokemon daycare and doing some light cardio outside, he'll level up, learn the new move, and forget Flash. And my plan worked like a charm.
Yeah.
It really sucks that this is the only way to get Pokemon to forget an HM move. You'd think they'd have some, I don't know, a move deleter NPC or something. Gosh. Now, you'd think that since I picked the water starter, that the fire type gym wouldn't be an issue. But it was. Floof and I quickly learned why biting lava was a bad idea.
Okay.
Thankfully, Kidmup, who... I don't know why I didn't send out first, took out both of Flannery's Slugmas with no issue. But then, she sent out Torkoal. Even though Kidmup was using a super effective move, he only did this much damage. Meanwhile, Torkoal's Body Slams were doing this much damage. And paralyzing us! Okay, Goat, I know you're the Goat, but you understand why you can't fight a fire turtle, right? RE2, looks like you're up. Finish her off with a steel wing.
Ah! Dude!
RE2! No! What do we do? What do we do? None of you are great choices. What I really need is a turn to heal up Kidmup, but... Hey, Iggy. Are you aware of the concept, taking one for the team? Given the dire circumstances, this felt like the best choice. Sorry, Iggy. With Kidmup healed, we managed to get Torkoal's health really low, but then Kidmup refused to finish the fight because he was, in his words, immobilized by love. Kidmup, I know you're letting this turtle body slam you on purpose, and you're sick for it!
Do you really think we have a future together?
Okay, Goat, I know this is a fire turtle, but she's mostly using body slams. Could you please... punch this turtle's head off without falling in love. We earned our 4th gym badge, but it wasn't without some casualties. RE2 and Iggy, we wouldn't have made it this far without you. Thanks for everything. We traveled into a sandstorm where I picked up 2 Pokemon, this fossil, and this weird Pokemon I've never seen before, Baltoy. Alright, King, my second chance at a fire type. I know this isn't your natural habitat, but why don't we train here in the desert for a bit? Oh, you found a Baltoy. I just caught one of those. I'm not sure what its moves are, though.
What nuts?
God! Okay, team. I know everyone is upset this... thing shares a species with the Pokemon who blew up King, but it possesses psychic abilities that I believe could be very useful. So, please everyone give a warm welcome to King Eater! No one step on it. We headed back to Petalburg City and faced gym number 5, my dad. Also, I brought Odd One-ish just in case we had another Iggy type situation. Am I an
integral member of the team?
You sure are, bud. Despite a few close calls.
Who? Dude! 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 Finish him off. No!
Everyone, including Odd One-ish, made it out alive.
Oh my god.
Good thing we have free healthcare. I don't know what I'd do if someone took away my free healthcare. Not right now, Goat. Across the water on Route 118, I caught Pikachu the Electrike.
Great.
I don't know, he's electric like Pikachu, and his head kind of looks like pickles, so... Whatever, having an electric type on the team is huge. After inspecting all the Pokemon I had, I figured Mr. Flash's flying poison moves could be useful. So I evolved him into Golbat, and then... Here you go, daycare lady! Alright, my favorite Pokemon, who wants some ice cream? Gosh, I love you guys. I couldn't ask for a better team right here. At Fort Tree City, we were ready to take on Winona, the flying-type gym leader. Wait, this weird lizard's blocking our path. Kidmup, can you... Oh, cool, you're back on four legs again. Also, Pikachu, why are you blue? The only thing that stood between me and Winona was this incredibly hard two-piece puzzle.
How do I get through this? Oh, figured out.
Pikachu was able to spark Winona's Swellow, and Kidmup, through sheer willpower, tanked all of Altaria's earthquakes, narrowly avoiding death by 8 hit points. Good work, Kidmup. Pikachu, you know what to do. I found a TM for Ice Beam on an abandoned ship, and... King Eater, you can learn Ice Beam? I'm sorry it's taken me this long to realize how awesome of a Pokemon you are. You know, King Eater, with you on the team, I think we'll be okay without a fire type. I entered Lily Cove City, and my rival wanted a rematch. Kidmup knocked out her Swellow, no problem, but then she sent out Grovyle. Ooh, I know the perfect matchup for this. King Eater, why don't you show this grass type that new move you learned?
Dude! Duh! Are you gonna use the hyper potion? No! No!
I can't believe I got that upset at losing a Pokemon that before this challenge I had never even considered playing with. If any members of the Claydol lover community are watching, I'm sorry, I didn't know he hated grass. All right, team, we're not fighting any more gyms until each one of you is in peak physical shape. Floof, why haven't you evolved into Houndoom yet? What about this fossil? Is this fossil any good? We picked the plant one. We got the plant. What about Mr. Flash? Has anyone seen Mr. Flash? Why hasn't that loser evolved yet? Hey, buddy. So listen. We're friends, right? You know, Goat had to stay in the daycare once. Yeah, it was to forget the move... Flash. Look, Mr. Flash, I know I technically shouldn't have even caught you, and I named you after a garbage move I thought you could learn, but I want you to evolve so you can be the best version of you on the team. Don't you want to join the team? I have this soothing bell you can hold on to. Welcome to the team, Mr. Flash. With the team stronger than ever, I surfed my way to an island that had a Pokemon graveyard inside a tall building, and for the first time ever, I could actually grieve with the other trainers. That was a great battle, dude.
Yeah, it was. Here's some money.
So, Kidmup was holding an amulet coin, so you actually owe me 600. We defeated more Team Magma grunts at the top of the tower, and on our way down, I caught what I thought was going to be a super awesome Pokemon, but turned out to be a little disappointing.
Let's go!
My third chance at a fire type, my son, the Vulpix, which I immediately evolved into Ninetales. Why was she a disappointment? I don't know. You'd think a fire type would have no problems defeating a Gloom, but alas... I'm not saying Ninetales is a lame Pokemon. I'm saying mine specifically was. Floof and Kidmup easily cleared the Psychic Gym with Shadow Ball and Surf, and with that, we just have one more gym before we... Is the sun on fire? So I haven't really been paying attention to the story, and now the legendary Pokemon Groudon is angry. And as much as I would have liked to have Groudon on the team, I never found the Master Ball, so we're not risking it.
Oh, hey, Wallace. Oh, you're the water-type gym leader? Oh, I hope my fighting grass Pokemon will be okay. No, you don't have to fight the Celio. I'll get Floof to do that. And with our 8th gym badge, we could finally travel through Victory Road and face the Elite Four.
Aren't you forgetting something?
I don't know how you want me to respond to that. This is it. Our final challenge. Each one of you has trained very hard, and as a reward, you'll each be receiving a piece of candy.
You get a candy. You get a candy. You get a candy. You get a candy. You get a candy. And you get a candy. This is it. This is gamer moment to the max.
Kidmup and Goat were able to finish off Sydney's Pokemon with their water, ice, and fighting moves, and my two dogs, Pikachu and Floof, crunched and bit all of Phoebe's ghost Pokemon. Pikachu might be cursed, though. Against Glacia, my son finally stopped being a disappointment and fire blasted her Glalie. Then I tried to get Goat to drain her Celio, forgetting he didn't like ice.
Okay.
Ice and birds, those are his two big no-nos. Luckily, Kidmup was able to Earthquake the rest of her Pokemon. Now it was time for the 4th member of the Elite Four, Drake. His Altaria was defeated by Kidmup and Floof, but they both took some damage. Against his Flygon, I sent out my son.
Okay, what about Fire Blast? You're green. Ah!
Then Flygon dug a hole in the ground, but by the time he came up, Mr. Flash was waiting for him and took him out with a fly. For Drake's next Flygon, I sent out Goat.
I don't think, because he doesn't like birds, and Flygon's a dragon?
Yeah, Flygon wasn't a bird, but I forgot a very important aspect about dragons.
Give him my dynamic punch. Nope, okay.
Oh, no! Oh, he knows flamethrower.
Fire and poison, those are his other two no-nos. Instead, Floop and Pikachu crunched Flygon's head off, and then I used Kidmup's last blizzard on Salamence.
Okay, I'm gonna need this blizzard to hit. Please? Yes! Yes! Yes!
We had done it.
Oh my goodness!
We had cleared 4 champions with some very close calls, but we are all still alive. Now it was time to face the 5th member of the Elite Four. What, you didn't know about the secret 5th boss that's in every Pokemon game? We had one more challenger. Steven. Steven sent out a Skarmory, which was the perfect lightning rod for Pikachu, then Kidmup took out Aggron with Surf, and my son defeated Cradily with Iron Tail. Then Steven sent out a Metagross, and things got messy. I thought Kidmup's Surf would be super effective against this rock with legs. Turns out it wasn't.
Okay, here's what we're gonna do. I have an idea. Kidmup, if you can last another hit, that would be amazing. Oh, Hyper Beam!
Kidmup, my starter Pokemon, had been taken out.
Okay.
At least he got Metagross's health low enough that Floof could easily finish them off.
That's it.
Then Steven sent out his own King Eater, which I knew from personal experience they hated getting crunched.
I know this Pokemon. He hates getting crunched. I don't care about your special defense. You're getting crunched! It's probably because his special defense went up!
Floof eventually took down Claydol, even though Steven used a full restore on it 3 separate times.
Of course! Of course you were!
Stop it!
Which I get, man. I'm part of the Claydol lover community, too. Next was the last Pokemon we needed to defeat. Armaldo. One hit from its ancient power badly injured Floof. So for this final fight, I sent Goat to finish him off. Goat, because he's so awesome, poisoned Armaldo just by standing next to him, and then promptly sky uppercutted him straight in the jaw, just barely knocking him out. Armaldo was clinging onto life when the unthinkable happened. Armaldo knew a bird move.
No! No! No!
Goat had made it so far into our journey, only to faint inches away from the finish line. I could have sent out a level 5 Zigzagoon and still would have won, because Armaldo died to poison on the very next turn.
The poison's gonna finish it off!
Right? I didn't even have to... No! No! Not Goat!
By all accounts, Goat had defeated Armaldo, but he didn't make it! And neither did Kidmup! That was my starter and my favorite Pokemon! No! No, I don't want this trophy! I want Goat and Kidmup!
Colleagues, friends, Wally, we gather together to honor two of the bravest Pokemon I know. One of them from the humble town of Little Root, and the other from a patch of grass in Petalburg Woods. Together, they faced gyms, rivals, and a plethora of wild Pokemon. And when the final challenge came, they didn't back down.
This sucks! I hated that!
And that's how my first Nuzlocke went.
Dude!
Grew Wumples, dude. Nothing, dude.
Dude! Oh! Dude, stop falling in love! No!
Tackle's so bad, dude. Body is lava, dude. Don't give him a chance to recover, dude.
Dude,
stop it. Bash their skull in, dude.
That was my psychic ice type, dude.
I have never played Fortnite, but we're going to be playing a lot of it today, so buckle up. If I am going to get cracked, then I should probably download the game. Wait, what's an epic launcher? I just want to play Fortnite. Luckily, this endeavor won't break the bank because Fortnite is a free game. Really? I get to experience all of this for free? Today, we're going to be playing 100 games of Fortnite to see if we can actually improve, develop a skill, and try and earn that elusive victory royale. I mean, we're not playing Fortnite. I'm playing Fortnite. You're watching a YouTube video. Now, before we get into any games, let's first... Alright, I'm just gonna go with my standard username, no big deal, and... Oh. Okay, yeah, that one's probably on me. The game's been out for 7 years, so I hope whoever has that account has been earning me a lot of dubs and make me look good. Okay, I guess we should keep a low profile. We don't want to get stream sniped, you know? So after hours of brainstorming, I settled on the name GatorGuy333. Cause I'm the Gator Guy. 333. There are two popular modes to play Fortnite. There's the classic Battle Royale mode with all the features and doodads that made the game as popular as it is, like doing this. And then there's Zero Build, where there's none of that shit. Now, which mode is the more competitive mode? Whichever mode I'm playing. For my very first game, I decided to play the classic Battle Royale mode, baby. We're playing Fortnite like how God intended. Builds on, ranked off, skin default. What, you think I'm gonna buy a skin? You think I'm gonna spend money on a free game? Get out of here. Oh my God, is that Peter Griffin? All right, enough talk. Let's start. I would like to remind you that I'm playing Fortnite for the very first time.
Who's shooting me? Oh God.
I didn't have a friend on call to tell me what buttons to press or give me emotional support. Like, no one told me, hey, don't drop that mythic gun for shield blasters. Shield blasters aren't even that good. Also, my go-to video games are Mario Maker and Tetris. I'm not really a first-person kind of shooter. What do you mean it's technically a third-person shooter? Who are the other two people? Instead of doing all of these unnecessary side quests, right now, my one and only quest is to be the best and not rest until I conquest all the sweats.
Do I take fall damage in this game?
Don't worry, Past James. You'll find out soon enough. I landed in fencing fields, and the second my feet touched the ground, I started getting shot at. I went inside a building and started breaking random objects, hoping that there was a gun inside them.
This is horrible sound.
And I grabbed a rare Striker AR. The very first gun of my Fortnite career and it's already a rare? Let's go, dude. But then I found an uncommon shotgun just lying on the floor, and I had to pick which gun I was going to take to battle because my inventory was already full of priceless items. I decided to keep my rare gun because it had more bullets and because I like the color blue more than green. So,
can I only hold one gun or is it like my inventory is full? Who am I talking to? Oh! Ah! You stood no chance, bro. You stood no chance.
In that moment, I had gotten what I thought was my very first Fortnite kill.
This, however, was not another player, but rather one of the many NPCs just wandering around the map. But I didn't know that at the time, so there was nothing but pure joy on my face. Almost immediately, I got a second Fortnite kill, and my suspicions that these were actually computer players were growing.
Is this a bot? Why can't I... They, like, didn't hurt me at all.
I started shooting what looked like a final boss, but had run out of bullets. Uh-oh. I ran away, narrowly dodging every shot being fired at me. I healed up, found another gun, tried shooting the boss again, ran out of bullets again, and then I ran away. Again. Hey, that's two confrontations where I didn't die. Clearly, I'm a natural. I knew I had to get away from the danger, so I started building a ramp.
And like... We're building a staircase. Ah! Oh, God! No! No, that's how it happened! That's how I went out!
So, yes. There is fall damage in Fortnite. You know what? Build mode sucks. Build mode's what killed me. We're done doing that. We're doing no build from now on. Now, before we get into game two, I would like to briefly explain some of the fundamentals I learned from playing that I wish someone explained to me. Starting with... the guns are going to be your main tool for killing, and every gun has a rarity assigned to it, ranging from common, uncommon, rare, epic, mythic, and legendary. Those last two might be switched, actually, I never knew which adjective was better. But either way, orange and yellow guns are more rare than rare guns, and more epic than epic ones. I'm sorry if you already know this, okay? This is just how I process things. Okay, I have to make a YouTube video about it. An uncommon sniper rifle could have the best scope in the game, while an epic one could have no scope at all. The epic sniper will do more damage and have a faster reload time, but if you can't hit anyone due to a lack of scope, which gun's actually better? Doesn't matter for me, I still couldn't hit anyone regardless. Also, this is an Overwatch 2. You have a limited amount of ammo, which in the early game is something you really have to be mindful of. I learned that my first day.
Am I out of... I'm out.
You'll just have to play the game to figure out which guns click with you, but my favorite guns are shotguns. And I have the data to back it up. The damage they do, as well as you not even needing good aim to do damage, make them a great choice for getting kills.
Fun! I'm having fun!
Unfortunately, you can't just go walking around with every shotgun you find. You only have 5 inventory slots that you have to use wisely. And you'll want to save at least 2 of those slots for a healing item and a specialty item. So really, you should only be going around with a maximum of 3 guns. But I'm not here to backseat game, alright? You can do whatever you want. It's a free game. Okay, enough explaining. Let's get back to match. I landed in fencing fields and immediately started getting shot at again. Not a super great start, I know.
How did you get a weapon so fast?
I found a gun, but with 3 other people shooting me, I decided my best option was to hide in a dumpster. Which turned out to be a terrible hiding spot because the boss lady found me in 5 seconds. And for the next 4 minutes, I grabbed any gun or grenade I could find and started using them on all the grunts shooting me. And I was slowly starting to pick them off.
What's up? What's up, guys? How's it going? How many kills is this? 1?
I was gaming so hard that I didn't even realize that this right here was my first actual Fortnite kill. XXX Dark Tonics XX. I'm sorry I had to do it to you, but you were the first player I ever eliminated. I hope knowing this fact makes you feel a sense of pride and accomplishment in me. My KD ratio is now perfectly balanced, so that's good. I took a moment to figure out the controls, and I started taking down some more players.
Let me see if I can, zoom in. Okay, I can crouch. Nope, that's... Oh, okay. Is there, a... Oh, if I hold... Oh, that's how I do it. What are you? Rare, and you have 30... Oh, wait, my other gun had 105 bullets.
With the boss eliminated, I opened a vault with a key card and found 2 epic guns and a rocket launcher. Also, on the way to the vault, I may or may not have dropped a mythic gun for some shield blasters. Thankfully, no one saw, so that would have been embarrassing.
Where's Tilted Towers? What was that?
A giant floating island appeared in the sky, and I decided to head up it.
See ya!
In the middle of the island, I started to capture a flag, and when I successfully captured it, I was rewarded with even more mythic guns that I didn't pick up for some reason. I'm sorry, rewatching this footage is just as painful for you as it is for me, okay?
Supersonic racing. Everybody was supersonic racing.
Come on, load, load, load! 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 Dude, I don't want to count any chickens or anything, but are we doing this?
I saw the storm closing in, and then I noticed.
Oh, there's only two people. It's me and one other guy.
And then this amazing clutch happened.
Okay, load, 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 load. Where'd you go? Where'd you go? Where'd you go? Where'd you go? Where is she? There she is. What? What do I do now?
Well, that just happened. My second game ever, and I already got a dub? Oh, you? Well, all of you astute, sweaty Fortnite players watching might have noticed that my final opponent kinda sucked ass. I mean, look at him. We're both in a completely open area, and this player can't even land a single hit on me. And they made it into the top two? That's because no matter how good you are at Fortnite, after every round, there's one winner and 99 losers. And if every player has an equal chance of winning, that would mean you're still losing 99% of the time. And if you were playing a video game where you lost 99% of the time, you would probably stop having fun and never play the game again. Or not, I don't know, I've never played Dark Souls. So what Epic Games does to remedy this is they fill up every match with bots who kind of suck sh**. This way, you can get some easy kills on other players and make it further into every game. At least you got 3 kills in 20th place, right? That doesn't feel as bad as getting 99th. However, the unintended consequence of this is that now, after every kill you get, there's a little thought in the back of your head thinking, did I actually kill someone with a soul, or is Fortnite going easy on me? So there's a pretty big chance that my first Fortnite kill, XXX Dark Tonic XXX, wasn't even a real person that could feel proud of me. Chances are, none of these other players are real.
Here are my opponents.
Eventually, we'll be at a high enough level where it'll start to feel like, you know, a challenge. We're just gonna keep trucking along. Let's start
No, 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 no. Okay. Oh, I'm out, I'm up. Cool. Hello? Hello?
Okay, I guess we'll chalk up those last two games to beginner's luck. Surely things will go differently in Matt.
A cabbage and a coconut. Cool. You just bite into that. And shotgun! And shotgun! And shotgun! Made me waste all my ammo, dude. Okay, anyone at all? Hello? Too easy! Too-
Technically speaking, no one has killed me yet. At least in match 2, I was the one who eliminated the last player, but matches 3 and 4 just handed me a crown on a fluffy pillow. You know, I wanted to do this really cool thing where we looked at spreadsheets and tracked my progress, but all the data's gonna get kinda messed up if I just keep winning all the time. Why learn the game or develop a strategy if everything I'm doing results in a win? It's upsetting that I'm already perfect. I hope this is still a good idea for a video. We still have a whole lot more Fortnite to get through, so let's just see if we can stumble and fumble our way into even more victories.
Ah! Ah! Oh, this is what loss feels like.
I think those 3 wins in a row made me a little cocky. I mean, no one has been able to stop me, so I wasn't trying anything special. When I saw another player, I would just do my normal strategy of standing still and shooting, and it got me 15th place. But this does prove that I can be stopped. Finally, we've faced a worthy opponent. Sheenie Sheer. F*** you, Sheeny Shear. Oh well, I guess we couldn't win them all. I mean, I still have more wins than losses at this point. As long as the next 50 games go well, then I won't be complaining.
I was looking at the map, bro!
How do I thank the bus driver? I would love to thank them, but I unfortunately do not know the button to thank them.
Gee!
I don't know what this is, but I'm afraid to use it.
I don't know what that does! I don't know what that does! Whoa, 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 whoa! No. Oh boy. Oh no. Ooh. Oh, oh, please don't, please don't. Oh, one of these days we're gonna learn how to thank the bus driver. $99. Oh, you're not f***ing around?
Well, me neither.
I don't know what I'm doing, you guys.
Wish I knew how to thank the bus driver.
The guy, oh, what is this? Medallion.
Cool. I want you.
Look at the camera, floof. Camera's right there, floof. What the? What just happened?
I was in the middle of a grind. How come when I shoot people, it takes like 4 or 5 hits?
I'm starting to get in heated gamer moments. Am I just bad at the game? Oh, I am bad at the game. Oh! Oh! What is this? How do I get you here? You got me.
Cool.
B? Oh! It's B! That was bad. That was bad. That was bad.
This match I started doing pretty well in.
We can't keep doing this. We can't.
I landed in Pleasant Plaza and got 3 kills without taking any damage.
We got the jump on him.
I started getting even more kills and was picking up some pretty good loot. I even picked up these 3 medallions, not knowing what they did. And before I knew it, there was only me and one person left.
There's only one person left?
This hadn't happened since those first 3 games, which I frankly didn't deserve to win.
Where are you?
I was upset, yes, but I can accept when I've been outplayed.
How did that happen?
In this match, I got my first and only kill with a cluster clinger right at the very start. Overall, I was able to get 9 kills this match. There were a lot of close calls in this game, but I was always able to find health packs and heal back up. As long as I stayed in the storm circle, I was going to let the other players come to me. And my patience paid off because once again, I ended up in the top 2 and I started to get nervous.
Oh, fiddlesticks. No, 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 no.
I made some dumb mistakes. Like once again, not picking up those legendary guns that were on the ground. What? I only got 3 kills this match, but I made it to the top 3 with a legendary run-and-pump shotgun. If you've played Fortnite, you know this is the most superior shotgun out of all the shotguns. I saw the last 2 players fighting by the storm, and instead of waiting for them to kill each other, I sniped Banana Joe 934 from afar. I was in second place yet again, but this time I had the last player in my sights.
Where are you? Where are you? I know about that running over people trick. No!
I want to talk about the top 2 jitters. Dude, I can't describe how anxiety-inducing it is being one of the last 2 players alive. You have narrowly survived every challenge and bot thrown at you for the last 20 minutes, and now the only thing that stands between you and a victory royale
is the best player in the game. Getting into the top two, I would literally be shaking and making mistakes that I couldn't afford to make. With so many close games, I decided to call it a night, and as my head rested on my pillow, I only had one question on my mind. How? By this point, Fortnite had started to slip into my subconscious. I was having dreams about Fortnite. One time I was lying in bed and I heard this sound. And I thought, there's someone nearby. I need to kill them. I pretty much got the gist of Fortnite. I had been to all the places on the map, I knew what every gun did, but I couldn't get over the second place hump. I needed to elevate my Fortnite skills. I needed to consult the Is anyone going to interrupt me? No? Look, not getting outside help was never part of the challenge, okay? Is it fair that everyone else already knows the buttons when I didn't even know what button used the scope? How am I supposed to know that? No one ever told me you can pick up the business turret after it's been thrown. And I'll never be able to pick them up. Here is the official guide to Fortnite. It's full of useful information like telling me where Tilted Towers or Loot Lake is. Oh, here's something. Surviving the endgame. It says you need to prepare to improvise. To survive this phase of the game, you'll want to have a few structures you can build. Okay, maybe this won't be helpful. Ah, here we go. You can claim a victory royale without building a single structure in the game, but you'll need sharp reflexes and to be able to move deftly to pull it off. Okay, so skill issue is what the official guidebook says. I was kind of hoping for some, I don't know, useful strategies. Something like, here's a link to an aimbot. So I decided to ask a real human for some help, and my friend Rush told me, hey, did you know there's a setting you can turn on that lets you visually see what direction noises are coming from? What? So now, even if my ears can't actually hear footsteps, the game will tell me, hey, there's footsteps to your right. Someone is definitely nearby. Now, this setting is for hearing impaired people, so is me using this setting as an able-bodied hearing man cheating, kind of? Yeah, kind of. But I need every bit of help I can get, and I bet most of you play with this setting on too, and you hear just fine. Now, let's see if we can apply this useful tool as we head into Oh, I have some bad news. I don't normally work with external hard drives, so I didn't realize these things were made out of eggshells. I was storing all of my footage on an external hard drive, and I guess I forgot to put it on its tiny pillow or something, because after I stored over 300 gigs worth of footage onto it, it stopped working. I took it to a data recovery specialist, and they quoted me $950 to repair it. Oh boy, I mean, I gotta go for it. The stuff on this hard drive's priceless. But then they were like, actually, there's nothing we can do, idiot, loser. You see these pictures we sent you? That means it's too damaged beyond repair. What were you doing to this hard drive? Were you throwing it on the ground? Were you hitting it with a hammer? So, unfortunately, we will never get to see games 63 through 99. Hey, are you crying?
No. Who are you?
I am your fairy Fortnite godmother. I'm here to help you.
Are you going to use magic to fix my hard drive?
What? Do you think I have magical powers?
I don't... Yes?
Magic can't change the fact that you saved all of your important, irreplaceable footage onto a single hard drive, stupid. But luckily, my child, you don't need any magic. You have Fortnite Did you know that Fortnite automatically saves your last 50 or so matches as a replay file that you can go back and watch later? This is a miracle! Because of replay files, we didn't lose any gameplay footage. We did, however, lose the webcam, so you won't get to see my live reaction or witty commentary during any of these games, which sucks, I know. I did this whole bit where I kept losing, so I became a sweat.
We're cracked! We're going!
But I'm just happy we're able to recover any gameplay footage at all, and I've also learned to back everything up. So with that little hiccup taken care of, how did I do with visual sounds turned on? Well, let's take a look at match...
And boom.
He's gone.
Ooh.
take that medallion, and there's a bunch of legendary guns, and I actually grab two of them. Two legendary guns. Circle real small, and then... Victory Royale. Very anticlimactic fight, but actually, now that we have a replay... So, you, and me. So they have, like, very low health. You have this health. Yeah, gotta get out of the storm, bro. Get out of the storm. Couldn't make it out. Gator guy's the winner.
You might say that a win is a win, but I kind of wanted a win where I pulled the trigger to get. So I did pretty well in match 63, but match 64, I got 81st place. So, am I actually getting any better?
There goes my crown.
In match 65 and 66, I got second place back-to-back.
Here I am looking for the last guy. Here's the last guy sitting on the roof. Here's his business turret looking. Both are right here on top of each other. Don't see each other. We're running. I still don't see him. Ooh, turret gets a lot of damage on me. I run for cover in there. Turret still shoots me through the wall. And then this guy just waits for me to come out of the building. Yep. And then finishes me off.
Nothing really special happened for the next few games besides getting 99th place on match 73 and getting 79th place on match 79th, which was the only time that the place number matched the match number. So that's pretty cool, I think. But then big things happened in match 8. It had taken me so long to complete 100 games that Fortnite changed seasons. There was a new ancient Greek-themed update that's totally old news by the time I get this video done. Parts of the map changed, my favorite business turret was removed, and my level was reset to level 1. This was my first time playing in the new season. I was unfamiliar with all the new locations and items, but I managed to get 5 kills and make it to the top 2. Me and the last player were shooting each other on our own hills, and then I decided it was time for some finishing moves. Is the storm getting close? Because I think I hear some thunder!
Oh, look at that. Almost missed. Exploded the tree right behind him. And they're like, oh, we're doing a lightning fight? We can do a lightning fight. Bam, oh, and that's it. Oh, they didn't want to overdo it. Oh, that's nice.
Then, in my very next match, I got 6 kills and was once again in the top 2.
Oh, I hope it didn't glitch out right there.
I had done it. My very first Fortnite win.
We both, like, have not loaded our guns. She misses. I hit her. She misses again. Really? Look, we're both reloading at the same time. As soon as I'm done, boom! Final kill.
It didn't really feel like a clutched game, you know? There weren't really any pro gamer moves. We were both running around fumbling to see who could load their gun first. But we're not getting points for style, okay? This is a win that I finally earned. Of course, you'll never get to see how I reacted in this moment. The best I can do is an artistic recreation. I kept grinding the 100 games to see if I could earn any more victories, and for a while, I couldn't even get back to the top 2. I knew I was running out of chances to clutch out more wins until I played match 90. Now, this footage is a little corrupted. I landed in Rebel's Roost and started exploring a house that isn't loading in the replay footage, and I found a legendary gun inside of a regular old chest. I know it sounds unbelievable, you just had to be there. Then I talked to an NPC that I'd never seen before, Mina. I gave her a job to be my buddy, and she did something I didn't know an NPC could do. Every 30 seconds, Mina would scan the nearby area, revealing anything important. Chests, ammo boxes, even other players would become illuminated. This was amazing. I had a legendary gun, and now with Mina's scanner, no one could sneak up on me. I understand why people play with hacks now. This power is amazing. I think I'm in love. I got to the top 2, but once again, I couldn't keep my composure and choked right at the very end.
And then I'm healing up behind a rock. And then... And I didn't even see him over there. In a 1v1, I was unable to clutch it out.
That's now 8 times I've made it to second place, with only one of those times I was able to kill the last player. After getting 45th place in match 99, I decided it was time to revamp my strategy. For my 100th game, I was going to do something no other Fortnite player could do. I was going to study every game I ever played to see if I could find any patterns to help me win. What's a Fortnite coach? We can look back and learn from our mistakes. We can study the Oh yes, baby, it's spreadsheet time. My favorite time besides snack time. I don't know about you, but I had just as much fun filling out the spreadsheet as I did playing Fortnite. This time, I didn't lose the footage. Now let's see if we can find anything useful in all these numbers. Taking a look at all the places we got, you can clearly see it's a little all over the place. When I started this quest, I was expecting to see a graph more like this, where I would start off bad and then over time get better and better, getting closer to the number one rank. But in Fortnite, skill level does not necessarily translate to a better placement. Sometimes you and another player land in the exact same spot, and the first gun you grab is a sniper rifle, and all you see is the magnified barrel of a shotgun, and other times you can make it to the top 25 without ever seeing another soul. I did notice that in my first 31 games, I was getting a pretty low placement, but then once I started to get the hang of the game, I would more consistently make it into the top 10. I mean, sometimes I would still die quickly, but it was less frequent. Now let's see if we can find a pattern in the data that would translate into getting a better place. Maybe the secret to getting in the top 10 is getting a lot of kills. If we compare the amount of kills I got each match with the placement, we see... Okay, I'm seeing a little bit of correlation here. The more kills we have, the better we tend to do. But sometimes I got 2 kills and made it to 79th place, and other times I got 1 kill and made it to the top 11. Technically speaking, you don't even need to get a single kill to get a victory royale if the other players are shit enough. But I think you'll be surprised to see what happens when we compare the placement with the length of every match. Now that's some correlation. The matches that were longer, we did better in. I think I'll apply this strategy to my 100th game. In order to not die, you have to stay alive. I'm a genius. Now let's shift gears and talk about every player who ever killed me.
Boo!
Here are all of their IP addresses, and here are their mother's houses, and most importantly, here is everyone's recorded playtime. Now we can determine who among my killers don't shower, and that'll make me feel better to losing to them. If we add up all of my killers' playtimes, we get an average playtime of 301 hours and 37 minutes. Now, gamers, if you've played a video game for over 300 hours, are you considered a sweat? I honestly don't know where we should draw the line, but let's just say for the sake of this video, if you're above a 301 average, you're a sweat. However, since it took forever to make this video, and Fortnite changed seasons yet again, we can check back in on these gamers in 3 months to see if the players we deemed as sweats do indeed play more Fortnite than everyone else. Some people played a little, some people played a lot, and someone even quit the game entirely after killing me. Now, I don't want to sound mean, but these gamers played an average of 50 hours and 6 minutes of Fortnite. I said mean. Which is like what, 33 minutes a day? Or 3.9 hours a week? That just sounds like a nice Saturday. Now, what can we do with all this information? Nothing. This is just a reminder to set your account to private because people on the internet are weird. Now, that's all well and good, but which gun is the most deadly to us? Here's a list of everything I ever died to in the game. Looking at the data, we actually have a tie for most deadly gun, with shotguns and ARs both getting 30 kills on me, and the most deadly rarity being a pretty close tie with rare guns getting 24 kills and epic guns getting 25 kills. So we want to be extra cautious if our opponent has a rare or epic shotgun or AR. Someone write that down. I really wanted to see if there was something in the data that would definitively prove that I was improving at the game. I wasn't happy with just looking at the placements because they were all over the place, but I think I found something that does indeed prove I am getting better.
my accuracy. Plugging in all the data, we get this scatterplot, which looks exactly like a target I would shoot during practice. But if we look at the scatterplot trend, my average accuracy at game 1 was around 22%, and by game 99, we're getting an accuracy of 31%, boys! That's 9% more accurate! That's improvement in my book! This abundant arithmetic is all well and good, but there's something we're missing. Which gun that I was shooting gets the most kills? Oh, you'll have to excuse me. I gotta get going. I'm hosting the... How are you guns all doing tonight? Before I give out these awards, I would like to give an honorary best assist trophy to the business turret. On record, the business turret was able to assist with 15 different kills. Unfortunately, business turret is unable to be here, so Porta Bunker will be accepting this award on their behalf. Alright, in third place, with 24 kills, we have Rare Shotguns. Thank you, Rare Shotguns. You're always there for me. In second place, with 27 kills, we have the Uncommon AR. Nice job, buddy. Keep up the good work. And the winner of the 2024 Fortnite Gun Awards are, with 33 kills, my eyes see the Uncommon Shotgun. So, going into game 100, we need to make sure we're equipped with a shotgun that's uncommon. Actually, this whole thing's stupid. Just because I got the most kills with the uncommon shotgun doesn't mean it's the best gun. It means it's the most common. I mean, uncommon. I'm sorry for wasting everyone's time. Let's just get back into the... By this point, I knew that I lost the footage for games 63 through 99. This was my last chance to get a victory royale on camera. It's do or die. For this legendary match, my girlfriend did something really sweet and gifted me a skin of a guy in an alligator costume, meaning I could finally be the real Gator Guy 333 and still not spend any money on a free game. Thanks, babe. During the first 99 matches, I would sometimes add silly little commentary even though no one was ever going to watch the footage.
Honey, did you leave the chest on the kitchen counter again?
But for this momentous match, I was going to remain completely silent. I needed all of my focus to be on the game. I landed in Zeus's Pantheon and immediately got 3 kills. A very close call. One more bullet would have done the trick. The most important match of my life almost ended with me in 84th place. So, admittedly, combing through the 21 hours of footage to fill out my spreadsheets took quite some time. So much time that they changed the game once again. They added a new item called the Legendary Banana. What does that do? Is it a weapon? Food items normally heal you, so why is it legendary? I decided to take the banana with me and figure out what it did later. After not seeing any chatter, I headed out of the Pantheon to a bunker opening nearby. I waited a bit to see if the coast was clear, then I made my way down and looted up. Heading outside, I saw an NPC. Ooh, I think someone's about to get a job. I couldn't find the source of the bullets, so I hopped into a sports car and drove away. But when I got out... I guess now's a good time to learn what this legendary banana does. It was over. My 100th match, and all I got was 16th place. And that's when I learned... You can read a description of what an item does in the tab menu. 100 games in, and I'm still learning new things. But it was too little, too late. My 100th game was a complete failure. Or was it? You see, I had set out to play Fortnite 100 times, and after this match, I had only played no build 99 times. Remember, my very first game was with builds on. Are we really going to count that one? For one, it totally messes with the spreadsheet that I have 99 no-build games and one build game. So, this next one, this is my actual 100th game. For the spreadsheet. I landed an old reliable Rebel's Roost to pay a visit to my favorite NPC, Mina. With her on my team, we were unstoppable. Inside, I randomly found a Midas service station that let me upgrade my rare shotgun into a legendary one. I didn't know you could upgrade guns. 100 games in, and we're still learning new things. We made it to the top 6 with 4 kills. Mina used an ingenious strategy of trying to shoot them through the ground. I like the spirit, Mina, but I don't think it's gonna work. We faced off, and I blasted them with my legendary shotgun. 5 people left. I healed up and waited for someone to appear on Mina's scanner. Finally, we spotted someone. 2 someones. A 2v2, huh? I tried to move to a better position, but a player started to flank me. Both of us started blasting, but I came out victorious with only 8 health points to spare. 3 people left. I healed up as fast as I could, and then spotted another player. I used the new River Styx skulls to jump forward, trying to shorten the distance between us. I got 1 shotgun hit on them, but they immediately threw down a Shield Bubble Jr. No one can fire bullets in or out of a Shield Bubble Jr., so I knew the only way I was going to get this other player would be from the inside.
Dude, I am
And those shaky nerves were probably the reason I died to an NPC. She was the goddess of hunting, sure, but still an NPC nonetheless. My NPC was shooting the ground. Where were you, Mina? So, I know you were all hoping to see a victory royale on camera, but I was never able to successfully win one. Or could I? Remember my second match that was against a bunch of bots? Are we really going to count that one? I mean, I wasn't even playing against real people, okay? I think we should strike that one from the record, too. From now on, only matches with real people count. In preparation for my actual 100th match, I tried some meditation to calm my nerves down. Okay, that time, I wasn't doing my meditation right. Okay, this... That one was bullshit. They got a super awesome gun right at the very start. We're not counting that one, okay? This... Wait, other players can see minus scans? People know when they're getting scanned? You know, something strange happened in Match 100 Part 5. Early on in the game, as everyone was scrambling to get good loot... I visually heard some footsteps outside, and I jumped out a window and saw a low-life default skin running helplessly into a wall, holding nothing but a pickaxe. My ranger pistol was drawn, pointed right at the back of their head, but for some reason, I didn't pull the trigger. I knew that if I were to achieve a victory royale, that eventually this default skin would have to be eliminated, but I took pity on them. We're all trapped in this endless cycle of violence. To what end? To be the last one standing in a giant death battle, only to die in a merciless storm? Also, they didn't want to spend money on a free game. You know, I get that. So, I did the only thing a Fortnite player could do to communicate intentions of peace. I danced for them. They slowly turned, still wielding a pickaxe they could have very easily swung at me during my dance solo. And then they did the unthinkable. They danced back to a copyrighted song that I can't play. And then the other player got out a piece of paper and drew a heart. While we stood there getting notifications that somewhere on the map, PAX Player 25, Shotgun Solo Spy 86, and Ginger Ninja 2906 eliminated Gaelic Gator 12. Oh no, a fellow Gator. Me and this other player were sharing a moment. A moment of friendship. Of course, this is still a battlefield, and just like the World War I soldiers on December 26th, I had to get back to shooting my friend. I gave this default skin somewhat of a fighting chance by giving them a handgun and letting them take the first shot. And they weirdly had dog shit aim, like non-human levels of bad, so I might have just shared this intimate moment with a bot. So even though we couldn't see a victory royale on camera, maybe we could do something better. Is it possible I had been playing Fortnite all wrong? I mean, not including those first 30 games where I was definitely playing wrong, but maybe the real Fortnites were the friends we made along the way. I'm done with trying to win. My new quest is to make at least one Fortnite friend. And to do this, I need ways of communicating to other players my peaceful, non-threatening intentions. I need to buy more emotes. I need to spend money on a free game.
Babe! Can I use your credit card?
The only emotes available in the shop were these three dances. They're not really the friendliest dances, but they were the only ones available. So let's see if we can take these new learned dance moves and see how far we can get with the power of friendship. While all the players were waiting for the battle bus, I wanted to do something I was never able to do before. Dance with another player. So many times, other players would come up to me and do a cool dance, and all I could do back was the lame default dance. So I went up to this girl in a yellow jumpsuit and started to dance. We showed each other that we both had zero crowns. Oh wait, she's got one. And I think my dancing impressed her because she went from swinging on a cloud to playing the guitar. So, as first dances go, it was pretty successful. When the match started, I headed to old reliable Rebel's Roost. And the first thing I did was stock up in the gun room. Okay, I know I'm trying to make friends this round, but sometimes people don't want to be friends. I made a rule for myself that if I saw another player, I would dance at them, but then if they started shooting me, then friendship quest is over, we're switching to they don't deserve my kindness quest. Okay, I think that's fair. That's a healthy boundary. I headed outside and saw my first potential friend. I tried showing them my new dance moves, but they weren't too impressed. They started shooting me with the aim that only a bot should have, and I had no choice but to end their program. The next potential friend I tried to make tried to shoot me while I was dancing, and maybe I was unintentionally matrix dodging all their bullets, but they couldn't seem to hit me either. I decided to recruit Mina again, thinking that her scanner would be useful to help find other potential friends, not realizing that she wasn't on a friendship quest right now, so she would be trying to shoot our potential friends. So if you're trying to do a friendship quest, then don't hire NPCs. I danced on top of portable bunkers out in the open, but there weren't any people to enjoy my dance moves. And before I knew it, me and Mina were in the top three, and I started to get excited. Maybe a little too trigger happy.
This is just my heart rate, dude.
I saw one of my last two opponents, I mean potential friends. I threw down a bunker and started to throw down on top of it. And as they were backing up, they started to point their sniper scope at me. Now, maybe they were looking at me through their scope thinking, whoa, is this guy with a cool skin actually dancing in the middle of a fight? That's awesome, I'm going to be his friend. But I didn't give them that benefit of the doubt. They hadn't technically shot me first, so I was breaking my only rule, but I didn't want to give them a free sniper headshot on me, dude. So in self-defense, I threw some lightning at them and finished them off with an epic DMR. An assist? That would mean I never showed this last player my friendly dance moves, but they took a shot at me, so this is fair game. I'll admit, I kind of lost sight of the friendship quest. I was no longer trying to befriend this player because I felt so close to achieving a victory royale. She came down from a tower, and I finally got a good view of who this last player was. And I was filled with so much bloodlust and darkness that I didn't even recognize her. It was the same girl I met in the lobby. The first player I had ever danced with. The girl in the yellow jumpsuit. I don't know the names of skins. I may not have recognized her, but I think she recognized me. She got on top of a hill and threw down all of her weapons and started to do the same swinging cloud emote she did in the lobby. I still hadn't realized what she was doing, and I took a shot at her. Luckily, I missed. That's that 31% accuracy right there. Only then did I realize what I was doing.
Wait.
And I was disgusted. I had set out to make a Fortnite friend, and now when someone extends an olive branch to me, I shoot them? I quickly danced back at her from afar. Mina took a shot at her, but I told her to wait back and threw a portable bunker over her. I didn't want to count my chickens or anything, but I think this is my very first Fortnite friend. I made my way around the hill, ignoring the dropped victory crown. This match was never about winning some crown. My new Fortnite friend jumped down the hill, and I crouched down to show how small and non-threatening I was. For a brief moment, we were the last two survivors in a giant battle royale, and neither of us wanted to hurt the other. I didn't realize what my new Fortnite friend was doing. She was purposely heading into the storm, forcing me to win. Goodbye, Fortnite friend. I'll always remember you. Oh, wait, she's coming back. Did she change her mind?
Hey.
No! My friend! Maybe if someone hadn't hit her with a bolt of lightning, she would have survived the storm. But either way, she sacrificed herself, and I got what I always wanted. A victory royale caught on camera.
Not like this! Not like this! Are you kidding me?
No. Pretty poetic that the only time I tried to make friends was the time I won. Not a lot of games have a fun free-to-play version, but Fortnite is totally that game. It's constantly getting new updates and is an absolute blast to play with friends. Parents can play it with their kids, millennials can play it with Gen Z, and everyone can have a grand old time chasing after that crown. But for me, I'm gonna keep on making Fortnite friends. And lastly, if you or someone you know is good at fixing hard drives, I will gladly send you this hard drive, and if you can get the files from it, I will give you $950. Please don't look around on that flash drive, especially don't look in the folder called taxes, because that's where my important tax information is, so just, you know, just fix it and just let me know, okay? Thank you all for watching this video about me playing Fortnite a lot. Now that it's all done, I'm gonna go play some more Fortnite. Are you enjoying the new season of Fortnite? Let me know in the comment box down below. That question will be relevant till the end of time, I think, so that's good. Thank you to my amazing team for getting this incredibly short video out in a timely manner. If you enjoyed a video game challenge video, let me know. Maybe next time I'll do 100 ranked matches of Fortnite. Anyways, don't really have any announcements. Be sure to wear your seatbelt. See you later.
When you're watching any animated piece of media, I think it's easy to forget that you're watching drawings move. Excuse me? What kind of Harry Potter dark magic is this? Since when did drawings move? I drew a picture of a dog once, but it hasn't moved at all, not even to play fetch. Well, what you're really watching isn't actually moving. What you're really watching is a series of individual frames played at a rapid speed on a liquid crystal display screen that emit photons into your eyeball receptors that get processed by your brain into what it perceives as movement. It was all a trickery, you see! A ruse that you fell for hook, line, and sinker! Now, a lot of you probably already know about the concept of the frame rate, but what I want you to understand is that in cartoons, every head turn, every blink, everything that happens had to be meticulously drawn by a person who studied anatomy and knows about physics and movement, knowing full well that their drawing was only going to be seen for a fraction of a second. And you weren't even watching! You were on your phone! Today, I would like to turn back the sands of time and talk about some of the ways animators were able to achieve the illusion of life without the help of modern technology. I hope by watching you can better understand and appreciate the medium of animation as much as I do, because the amount of dedication and hard work that goes into just making drawings move is unreal. And if you're like me and already know a bit about animation history and find this kind of stuff fascinating, don't worry, I didn't have a lot of friends growing up either. Now, we know that animation is just copious amounts of drawings being shown in rapid succession. But how the fuck are we going to get people to look at copious amounts of drawings in rapid succession without a computer? Well, believe it or not, there's actually quite a few things we can do without even having to use a camera. One method we can try is by drawing out all of our frames on a stack of paper. I know that's the time-consuming part, but after we're done doing that, we'll hang up all our drawings side by side on a very long wall. Then we'll ride a bike next to the wall and continuously have our head turned facing the wall, and if we pedal fast enough, we'll zip by the drawings so fast that it'll look like they're moving.
Hey, look! It's a horse!
Okay, you're probably thinking, that's not how animation is made. And you're right. This method of animation is totally impractical, but not impossible. This type of human transportational animation has been done before in subway tunnels, with the results looking pretty legit. I mean, this minion looks like he's totally moving. I might as well be in the cinema. And for those of the gamer variety, YouTuber Pale of Pears was able to achieve this method of animation flawlessly in Minecraft. But if you wanted to do something more practical, you could instead take your drawings off the really long wall and then stack them up like a book and then just flip through the paper quickly, making a flip book. If you have some sticky notes lying around that you forgot about in a junk drawer somewhere, you can make a pretty simple ball bouncing animation really quickly, with the results being, you know, kind of cool. A fun fact, this type of animation was featured in every single copy of the Animorphs books, which I never read. I would just flip through the pages and watch the children in the corner transform into elephants and starfish and this weird blue alien centaur thing. And what the heck was going on in these books, man? Okay, this next method of showing people drawings in rapid succession is going to be a little bit crazy. I don't want to freak you out, but it's basically on the same level as rocket science, okay? We're going to have to jump up a whole dimension for this one. What you're going to do is sculpt out a three-dimensional figure of whatever you want to animate. Let's animate, I don't know, this guy jumping. So first, I'm going to sculpt my guy just standing there, just being a dude. This will be frame one. Now, okay, I know some of you are probably thinking, oh, I see where this is going. You're going to take a picture of the sculpture, then change its pose slightly, take a picture of that, and then slightly change the pose over and over while continuously starting and stopping the camera, making it seem like our subject has some sort of motion. No, actually, we're not going to be doing any of that. Cameras haven't been invented yet in this hypothetical. What we're doing instead is making a whole new sculpture that will be the next frame of our animation. So it'll be our guy again, bending his legs a little bit, getting ready for the jump. All right, neat. That's frame two. Now let's do this a total of, I don't know, 16 times? That sounds good. Let's also make the 16th sculpture look like it came before the first sculpture. So you understand, it's going to go from the 16th sculpture back to the first one. It's a loop, like a TikTok. We're doing a TikTok loop. Now we're going to take all 16 of our sculptures and space them out evenly on a round table. Sorry, Arthur, I'm going to need this. Now, make the table spin. That's on you to figure out how to do. I don't know. Maybe get the bike guy from the first example to pedal or something. I doubt any of you are actually following along, but if you are, put all your sculptures on a spinning table right now. And make it quick, all right? I'm not going to wait for you. And now, for the final step, turn your lights on and off really quickly. And if we did everything right, the effect we get is mesmerizing. What's happening is that the light shines at the first sculpture, and then we turn the lights off. Cool. Then, as the table spins, the light will turn back on when the second sculpture is in the same position as the first. So we turn the lights on when the sculptures are in the same spot, and we turn them off when they're not. And what we end up seeing is all of our figures standing in a circle performing the animation, and we don't even register that the whole thing is spinning. And congratulations, you all know what a zoetrope is now. Which, I know, is a pretty fun word that you can whip out at parties, like, yeah, I know a unique word that starts with the letter Z that isn't xylophone. Another fun thing about the zoetrope was that a 3D rendering of one was featured in the Season 2 opening of Mob Psycho 100. So that's what that spinning thing in the intro was. It was a zoetrope. Zoetrope. Okay, let's talk about one more way we can show people drawings in quick succession without a camera, and it's the easiest method by far. So all we need is this glitchy, abstract drawing like this. Pretty cool and random, right? Except it's not. It's not random at all. I lied. Every line here is placed very deliberately. Let me show you something. If we take this floppy, transparent sheet full of vertical bars and cover up most of the drawing, hey, look at that. The outline we end up seeing looks like one of them kitty cats. Now, if we slide the transparent sheet over and reveal different parts of the drawing, it looks like a kitty cat but in a different position. And if we keep sliding the sheet over, revealing different parts of the drawing, look at him go! This is called a barrier grid animation, and with the right base drawing, you can make all sorts of animations that don't hurt to look at all. And also, I just want to point out that a barrier grid animation was also featured in the Season 2 opening of Mob Psycho 100. Hey, do you guys want to watch anime later? So all these different methods of showing people drawings in quick succession, I don't know if there's a word for it, but I'm calling it physical animation. Like animation you can hold and touch with your fingers, you know? All those warrior cat animation memes, that's digital animation, right? This is physical. It's the real deal. But there's one form of physical animation that we haven't talked about yet that's unarguably the most popular and the most important form of physical animation to have ever existed on Earth. Excuse me. Okay, now we're gonna use cameras. Okay, they finally figured it out. With the invention of film, showing people multiple images in quick succession had never been easier. Now we can take something from real life, burn an image of that into a film strip, process it, and then shine a light through it again to get a recreation of the image. And if we roll this whole strip of film over this strobe light, we get moving pictures. That's why they're called movies, because they move. What the fuck? A lot of times, film was used to capture the movements of real people, but it was also used in the same way to capture the movements of people of the animated variety. Let's take a look at an old, old cartoon. The 1968 animated Batman series. The first time Batman has ever appeared in the animation form. You know, the really, really old Batman cartoon that had onomatopoeias appear on the screen during fight scenes? Boom! Pow! Ka-chow! Except they didn't! They didn't do that in the cartoon. Visually showing the verbiage of impacts was exclusively an Adam West thing. In the cartoon, you gotta see those impacts! Hey, can I ask you a thought-provoking question? What the f*** am I looking at? I know it's Batman high-kicking a goon, but how is it moving? This frame was captured on film, so there had to be a physical camera to capture it, right? So where is this drawing? It's not on a computer. Computers in the 60s looked like this. So where is this? So every animated movie and animated TV show and animated anime before the year 2000-ish used what's called cell animation. This frame of Batman was hand-painted, that's right, painted, with special paint onto a transparent celluloid sheet, or cell. And then this transparent sheet was laid on top of a hand-painted background, and then this goon that got kicked, well, he had to be painted on his own cell sheet too, and then this image of sandwiched art was captured onto a film thing, strip, shit. Then the Batman cell would come off and be replaced by a whole new hand-painted cell of Batman, and then that frame would be captured, and then the whole process would repeat again and again until the shot was done. This one shot that lasted a little over a second used 14 different hand-painted drawings of Batman, and the goon had 6, just for a second. Now, because having to hand-paint 20 different images for 1 second is insane, there are some things we can do to cut corners without having to sacrifice too much quality. Like in this shot, Robin takes 5 frames to turn his head, but his body doesn't move, so we can paint his body once on its own cell, and now we only need to paint 5 different heads. And since we already have all the frames painted, we can just use the same frames in reverse to make his head turn the other way. And you don't need to pay a background artist to paint a background if you just use blue. A big part of cell animation was being able to animate pieces of a character independently of each other. That's actually why so many old cartoon characters had accessories around their necks, so the animators could separate the characters' heads from their bodies, making it easier to animate. Fred wasn't rocking that ascot just because it was trendy. One of the nice things about using a computer to animate is that you can play back what you've animated and clearly see if your timing is correct and if there's any quick adjustments you can make. Being able to see what your previous frames are is so important there's actually a term for it called onion skinning. But animators pre-2K didn't have computers to rewatch their work, so here's what they did instead. Before they even put paint onto a cell, they first had to draw all their frames out onto a piece of paper. And they didn't work on the frames in chronological order. Like, they didn't go, okay, I just drew the first frame of Batman. Okay, here's the second frame of Batman. Okay, I'm gonna go do the third frame of Batman. Okay, you do the fourth frame, though. That way of animating is called straight-ahead animation, and some people use it, but the results look pretty chaotic, but it's still used pretty effectively for effects and concert visuals. But most of the time, animators will animate a character from pose to pose. They'll draw out all the important key poses a character will make on paper, and then they'll hold the pieces of paper between each of their fingers, and then quickly flip between their drawings just to get an idea of what a drawing that goes in between those key poses would look like. That's called in-betweening, just so you know. And they still wouldn't be able to get a full playback of their animation until every pencil drawing was captured on film and processed. They just had to trust their page-flipping technique and their highly trained eyeballs and go, "Yeah, that looks about right. Let's bring out the paint." And because there are hundreds of shots all having to be animated without a computer, can you really blame the animators that some shots of Batman looked like this? Or this? It was old, remember? Old things are bad. Okay, I kind of have a secret. Remember when I said, let's look at an old, old cartoon? Well, I might have overemphasized how old the Batman cartoon is. By the time the Batman cartoon came out, the movie Bambi had been out for 25 years. And are you aware of how f***ing fluid the animation in Bambi is? Dude, Bambi goes so f***ing hard. Walt literally brought in deer from the woods into their studio just so the animators could be like, "Oh, that's neat. That's how deers move. I understand this more now." What the f***? I honestly thought the Batman show came out way earlier in the animation timeline because of how it looked. Obviously, these two things were created by different studios with different animators and different budgets, and TV animation always has to create more animation per budget, but all the same techniques and equipment used to make an episode of Batman were the exact same techniques and equipment used to make an episode of Bambi. I don't mean that as a dunk on Batman. I'm more so impressed with how amazing Bambi looks, especially since while it came out, World War II was currently happening. So because celluloid sheets were used to animate every TV show, movie, and anime there has ever been before the year 2000-ish, by my calculations, there are millions of cell sheets out there. Like this single frame of Batman kicking, it's on a cell sheet somewhere. And more importantly, who owns it? Many of the cells that still exist have been sold to the general public. But because of how the paint and time works, cell sheets need to be kept very well preserved. So since cells are very hard to preserve, and because they're not making any new ones, some cells are worth a lot of money. This cell and original background from My Neighbor Totoro sold for $84,000. While I'm writing the script, there's currently an auction going on for this cell from The Jungle Book for $10,000. And I own this cell of Squidward laughing that I got at a convention for $300. It's not an original background. The background's a print, and it's actually not even the correct background for the shot. But I'm just pointing out that not all cells are thousands of dollars. You know, they made millions of these. So you can get a cell from a TV show for a couple hundred. And then you get to own a frame of animation. Like, that belongs to you now. Which I think is super cool. This moment of Squidward laughing belongs to me. And you can't have it. So if you ever visit some friends who really like cartoons, there's a good chance that they have an animation cell somewhere on display. And those are just a handful of ways that animators were able to achieve